6 weeks at number one for Seether with Country Song. We'll be back next week with more of the best rock plus songs I handpicked for you. We'll have a blast from the past. I'll be on the road all summer long. I'm taking Carrie with me. I'm Nikki Six.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. See ya.
Until I get arrested.
Yes.
The Sash Show is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done. Now. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Night Call is back. We took Memorial Day off. We're going to have 4th of July. They let us have all the holidays off, don't they, Jolene?
Yeah.
I hope everybody had a good one. I did.
Well, I worked through the holidays, as I always do. You know, I'm just used to it. I don't mind it.
I don't do as much anymore.
You know?
Yeah.
You got to slow down someday.
I've got so much serious stuff to talk about. I know you do as well, but
yeah.
let's go for the lighter stuff first.
Really? Okay.
Well, first off, we should tell people, and every once in a while, people tune by, I've never heard this show. It's a phone-in talk show. This is a rock station, one of the, I was going to say classic rock stations, although, how would you get me out of this hole?
It's an active rock station.
An active rock station. But
it's classic in the way it's been here for a lot of years.
40 years. 40 years, that's
right.
And
you hear every one of them.
Yeah, I was there. I invented radio.
And the wheel.
And the wheel, yeah. So, where was I going with that?
Phone
numbers. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743. And we take any topic, but we try to stick to politics, usually.
Sure.
I've given dating advice here and there and different things that pop in. Or maybe life advice, like get one.
There you go.
But I'll try to be nice.
Calltalkyes@yahoo.com is our email address, and you can email us stuff. If you want short stuff, read on the air, send that. If you want longer stuff for our consideration, and we'll check that out after the show, tomorrow or something. But calltalkyes@yahoo.com. My personal website is peterwerbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. And we have a Facebook page, which is pretty active, thanks to Debbie and to you, Jolene, as well. A lot of good stuff on there. And that
I say
is
more thanks to Debbie.
I'm
in there.
I'm trying to be nice to you.
I appreciate it. But let's give credit where credit's due.
Right. And what? So that's just facebook.com/nightcall. Sarah and Athena are waiting for your calls at 313-298-9743.
And we appreciate them being in there every Sunday night. You know, I know it's a grind to both of those girls are in school.
Yeah.
And coming here late at night, going to school Monday morning. So we appreciate them.
All right. Here is, you might think this is serious, depending on how you look at it. But, before we get to the death and destruction and shooting into crowds of unarmed demonstrators and the collapse of the economy and all that, in the Russellville Middle School yearbook. Now, what state is this? Doesn't even say. I think somewhere in the South. You'll see the students' pictures, the administration, and a pretty controversial list that's supposed to be covered with a piece of black tape. So you can imagine this. Here's the yearbook, and in it there's a piece of black tape. School board member Chris Cloud has two kids in the Russellville School District, and one of their kids brought it home. And he says, my problem is the tape can be removed easily. I'm furious as a parent and as a board member and as a taxpayer.
And as a resident
of Russellville, you were going to save me. It's wrong. Now, here's what he's talking about. The list is titled Top 5 Worst People of All Times. The top three in order are Adolf Hitler, Osama bin Laden, and Charles Manson. Number 4 and 5 are?
George W. Bush and Dick Cheney.
So this appeared in a yearbook.
This is great. And, I mean, they tried to fix it with tape.
Yeah, Superintendent Randall Williams calls the list an oversight. Parents caught it. I mean, what do you mean an oversight? After the yearbooks were printed and they decided they were going to cover the list with tape, it didn't work. Really? Said Williams when he told the tape could be pulled right off. Well, that's disappointing.
All these people are idiots.
Well, that's disappointing.
Really?
When asked if the yearbook sponsor, a paid teacher, thought that it was appropriate to include the list in the yearbook, William said no. So there you go.
Even if he didn't think so, he would have to say no.
Yeah, William said the yearbook editing process is under review. What do you think?
So I wonder who snuck that little gem in there.
You know, Tom Hayden, one of the founders of the radical student group, the 1960s Students for Democratic Society, SDS, he was the editor of the Royal Oak, Dondero High School. Either that or...
Was he really?
You know,
I did not know that.
Either that or the other Royal Oak High School, which I can't remember. But anyway, he gave a final editorial, and it was just innocuous. You know, I like being at Dondero, that was the school, blah, blah, blah. But then when you read it down, you know, just the first letter of
every sentence?
It said F U.
Oh, did it really? Yeah. Well, he's just an ordinary little one, huh?
From how about this? What do you think about this? If I had an invention and I said, I'm going to have to give it away from the beginning. Say that the only mode of transportation in this society were feet and bicycles and scooters, you know, foot-propelled scooters and skateboards and stuff like that. And I said, listen, I've got an invention that we can get people zipped around everywhere, go thousands of miles enclosed and essentially sitting on cushions and listening to music at this rapid rate. And
we can see the world.
And everybody said,
the country.
That is absolutely terrific.
Yes.
Is there any downside to it? Well, there's probably going to be about 35,000 to 40,000 people that die a year in accidents, and probably a couple million that are going to be in serious injuries, and millions more in minor industries. Well, what about anything else? Well, there'll be several $1 billion in property damage, and how's this thing propelled? It's got this fuel. Is there any downside to that? Well, they got to fight wars for it.
Yeah, and there's a dependency develops.
And it's poisonous at every step of the way, you know.
Well, and it helps contribute to the destroying of the planet.
Yeah, but it gets you around real fast.
Yeah.
It would never be allowed to come into production.
Right.
And
if all of those things were laid out.
And how about this? In 9 years, almost 50,000 pedestrians were killed in the United States alone.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And we drive pretty well. I don't know if you've been in other countries.
Yeah.
And
and it's kind of scary.
Yeah. The top 10 cities, Detroit, fortunately, did make it. The top 4 cities that are the most dangerous for pedestrians are Orlando, Miami, Jacksonville, and Tampa.
What's with Florida?
Florida, and then the rest are
Florida's
kind of
a wreck.
Okay, fun time's over.
Hey, you know what, Peter?
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Yeah, we have a friend called Mr. Moth who's decided to join us tonight. This is the first. We've never had an insect on the air.
We're not going to kill it.
No, we're not. We're going to let it just fly around the whole show.
Yeah.
Oh, darn it. There my thought went.
Okay. Well, okay, then we got to get to the serious stuff. I mean, so much is happening in the Middle East. The president of Yemen left the country and probably will never be back. There's an enormous celebration going on now. They're assuming that that he's gone for good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was all sorts of, quote, clashes. You know, I want to center on that verb, clashes, in a little while. Syria continues to just mow down unarmed protesters. Yeah. There was one photograph. I don't know if you saw that, but there was it was taken from a building, and there was a Syrian soldier sitting atop this on a rooftop with a machine gun. Mm-hmm. And as far as the eye could see down this seaway road, there were, and I assume men, just men praying. I mean, there must have been really? Hundreds of thousands. Ugh. So how in the world they figure this is going to happen? So, I mean, so we're attacking Libya, and we'll talk about a little later about the U.S. Participation in the Libyan war. And, we're saying to the Assad government of Syria, naughty, naughty, don't do that.
Right, you know. I know. Isn't it just amazing?
And on the other hand, the Gaddafi government, not a very nice government, but still one that has killed maybe hundreds of its citizens, if that, in essentially warfare. Here it's unarmed citizens. And now Israel today shot and killed 20 unarmed Palestinians and injured 235 by gunfire. This is Israeli forces fired at protesters on the Syrian frontier on Sunday after protesters tried to breach the border for the second time in 3 weeks. And this is a very complicated situation.
Extremely.
Without trying to get into all the details of it. But these are people that feel that their land has been taken from them, and they are going to breach the border that the Israeli occupation has set up.
These are very brave people.
Well, yeah. Now the Palestinians are creating a permanent encampment, much in the manner that the Arabs have done in other cities, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. like in the squares and what have you. But always, let me do this first. I always wonder. What happens in the psychology of a Syrian soldier or an Israeli soldier or any of these people that say, that are told, okay, fire on these unarmed people, and they do it. I mean, that is so far outside of the realm of the psychology of most people.
I'm sure that they feel they have no choice.
They're following orders.
They're doing what their job is.
Well, there's a famous, you can do what you want with the analogy, but there's a famous book about this Hamburg police unit that was sent in by the Nazis into Poland and began killing Jews. Mm. And a lot of them said exactly that. That's where they came from. I mean, I had there were command orders. I would have had to mutiny. But, you know, mutiny in many cases has a grand tradition. But here, Israel clashes with protesters on Syrian border. Now, as soon as you see the verb clashes in any mainstream corporate media thing, you know, for instance, usually it's like protesters clash with police at a political convention.
Yeah.
You know that the cops kick the crap out of a lot of the protesters were in flip-flops and shorts, right? And the cops were all robocopped out or had horses.
And they are, and they do, and full
kick,
force.
Yeah, and kick the living crap out of people.
Yeah. Or at the least, Peter, spray them with the inevitable pepper spray.
Yeah.
I remember one of the protests I went to, and there were all these elderly people who had gone across the bridge, the Potomac
Bridge.
And so we're all the way on the other side, and these people had marched and marched and marched, and they thought they could get right on to the metro train stop right there. And these are people who could not walk anymore, and they bullied them back, and they had to find ways to get out of there. These poor people were sitting on the side of the road, you know, ready to just collapse.
Yeah, so in here, in this headline, Israel clashes with protesters on Syrian border. How about this? Israeli forces kill 20 unarmed Palestinians, 325 others injured by gunfire. That would be my headline. Mm-hmm. And that's a little more accurate. That portrays what's really going on. But there's a fear that it will, it'll look like the newspaper is
pro-Palestinian.
Pro-Palestinian, of all things.
Yeah. Yeah, of all things. Remember, Peter, when our friend who's a singer-songwriter, he has that shirt that says, "We are all Palestinians"?
Yeah.
I was at a house concert with him down, way down Coral Gables, like Miami, Miami. And I was driving around for different concerts. He had that on, and there were a lot of people from Israel there, a couple people. And they said, well, what does that mean? We are all Palestinians. And you could tell he was so used to defending himself, I mean, in airports and everywhere, because he wears the shirt everywhere. And he just says, you'll hear about it in one of my songs. Just kind of.
And is he Jewish?
I think he is Jewish.
I think he may be. Yeah. Let me see. Caller wants you guys to talk about how Global Commission said war on drugs is complete failure. You know what? Where did that go to?
Yeah.
I had that. Where was that?
I don't know, Peter. Do you want me to find it?
No. It was not. Maybe I had it from the week before. Or maybe I, you know what? I think I read it 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
I think so. I don't know. But, you know, last week was Memorial Day, and Jalene and I always have Memorial Day off. We'll have 4th of July off. What do we have? Easter, Christmas, all the big ones, right?
Well, yeah, especially the religious ones. They want us out of here. No, not we really make that up because they don't judge us on any of that.
No,
but I wouldn't want us on here.
Hey, listeners, jump in at any time, 313-298-9743. We got some open lines for you.
And also, can I give you a quick email?
Sure.
We were talking about, at the beginning of the show, about the yearbook in the school, and we think it's the South somewhere, and there was a list of the worst people in the world, and it was, you know, Osama, Hitler, Charles Manson, and then they had George W. Bush and Dick Cheney on there as well.
Four
they got
and five.
Through. They tried to, if you just tune in, they tried to cover it up with tape and sent out the new
all
yearbook.
All the books, all the yearbooks with a piece
idiot.
Of tape. Yeah.
And so we got an email from Jeff in GOP Hell, Indiana.
Okay.
Jeff says, "Hi, Peter and Jalene. The only thing wrong with that school's yearbook is that W and the Dick should have been number one and number two." And then he said, "Love the show." He says, tells us to keep up the good work. We will. And I know you enjoy. Is this true? Do we enjoy messing with conservatives? Okay. Yeah.
Well, Memorial Day is when we honor those men and women who have fallen in service to the United States. It really came about at the end of the Civil War. And
it really, really did. I just read.
The question, people are so usually, or maybe, I don't know, maybe people are aware of this, but the question was how to memorialize 625,000 dead soldiers. And that's more than all the rest of American wars put together, including World War II.
Yeah.
If the same number of Americans per capita had died in Vietnam as in the Civil War, 4 million names would be on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial instead of 58,000. Officially, the North Memorial Day emerged in 1868 when the Grand Army of the Republic, as they called it, the GAR, the Union Veterans Organization, called on communities to conduct grave decorating ceremonies. In fact, it was called Decoration Day initially. On May 30th, funereal events, how do you say that?
Funereal? Well, they spelled it wrong. The New York Times got this wrong.
No, that's right.
Is it really? I was going to ask you, is this a word?
Funereal.
I've got to remember this one for Scrabble.
Funereal events attracted thousands of people at hundreds of cemeteries in countless towns, cities, and mere crossroads. By the 1870s, one could not live in an American town, north or south, and be unaware of the spring ritual. Like in downtown Detroit, right across from CompuWare, there's a soldiers and sailors monument, and that was put up.
Oh, sure, yeah.
At Woodmere Cemetery, am I remembering the name right? Out Fort Street, there is a Grand Army of the Republic gravesite where all the Michigan or the Detroit area veterans are buried, including my great-great-grandfather.
That's right, your grandpappy.
Whereas I have absolutely no tolerance whatsoever for the Johnny Rebs.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he died a natural death. But, still, he got wounded, as a matter of fact, which is unusual to have gotten wounded and lived.
Oh,
but,
true.
Yeah.
But, such a bloody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was suddenly modern warfare without modern medicine. So it was horrible. The practice of decorating graves, I'm reading from a New York Times article called Forgetting Why We Remember by David W. Blight.
Do you have this on your website? I recommend this
really?
Reading right here.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I'll put it on. Let's see, it gave rise to an alternative name, Decoration Day, and let me see. In 1866, the Ladies Memorial Association of Columbus, Georgia, chose April 26th, the anniversary of General Joseph Johnston's final surrender to General William T. Sherman, to commemorate fallen Confederate soldiers Later, both May 10th, the anniversary of General Stonewall Jackson's death, and June 3rd, the birthday of Jefferson Davis, were designated Confederate Memorial Day in different states. Look, I got to tell you, folks, and, you know, this may not go over well. This would be like Germany having monuments to fallen SS officers.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, so appalled.
These racist politicians that wanted to maintain a slave state, that was their state's rights, were responsible directly for the deaths of 625,000 people, the destruction of good parts of the South. And we were talking a little earlier about how, an order comes down. Here's, unarmed Syrian civilians. Yeah. Here's unarmed Palestinians trying to get over the Israeli border. And someone says, shoot, and they shoot into them. And I wonder, what is the psychology of someone that would pull the trigger when they're not in danger? I mean, the Israeli soldiers were not in danger. Yeah. Certainly the Syrians Syrian troops were not in danger. But here, these slave owners, the wealthy of the South, were able to mobilize ordinary men to fight for this slaveocracy that they had no part of whatsoever. I just don't get it.
Yeah, at all.
Let's see a couple more things here. In the South, Memorial Day was a means of confronting the Confederacy's defeat, but without repudiating its cause. And that means in Alabama in 2008 that 80% of white people voted for John McCain.
Yeah.
They got 20%, Barack Obama. Some Southern orators stressed Christian notions of noble sacrifice. Others, however, used the ritual for Confederate vindication and renewed assertions of white supremacy.
So just another one of these holidays with these evil roots, really.
Yeah.
This one rooted in racism.
Well, for the South.
Right, for the South.
Yeah, because if you do remember, dear friends, did I write this? I thought I wrote this down. But, there is a little, and if you want to, cut the South a little slack, if you want to cut, this attempt at creating a slave nation, the United States was a slave nation, enshrined in its Constitution originally, but to maintain the United States as a slave nation, I won't cut them a bit of slack, because anybody that says the Pledge of Allegiance, forget about the introduction of Under God in the 1950s, mm-hmm. It says one nation, indivisible. And the desire for these people who were the biggest traitors in American history, the South, the Southern leaders, the ones that are honored, the Stonewall Jacksons and the Jefferson Davises and what's his name? Lee. Why can't I think of his name?
General Lee?
Yeah, what was
it? I don't know.
What was his first name?
I think it was the car.
Yeah. That's so bizarre. He's the famous. I'm related to him.
Someone, you know what it is. Someone will help us out.
Why? What is this? What is happening in my brain? You know why? Because each of us have like 40 pieces of paper.
Yeah, in front of us. It's information overload here at NICOL.
Anyways, my family, the southern branch of it, is related to the Lees of Virginia. Including the General Robert E. Lee.
Thank you, Peter.
Isn't there even a rock song with sailing on the Robert E. Lee?
We're going to get a demerit for this one.
Yeah. His father was, I think it was his father, was Light Horse Harry Lee, who was a guerrilla fighter in South Carolina. So all the women in my family are eligible for membership in the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Well, aren't they lucky? Yeah. There was another part of this article where it was covered up that one of these celebrations or commemorations, I think that was the 1865 one, it was covered up because African Americans actually attended it. Did you read that part?
No.
Yeah, and they tried to, the white conservatives tried to cover this fact up, but this wonderful historian discovered all this juicy information.
And just, I think the last veteran of World War I just died.
Oh, like 100, I missed that.
108, 112, something like that. And large numbers of World War II vets actually die every year, as you can imagine, as they head into their mid-80s and older. And think about Vietnam vets in their 60s, some in their 70s. And but no worry, the United States keeps involving itself in wars, and so there will always be people.
And meanwhile, cutting these guys' benefits probably, or threatening to.
Well, get this. Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates pledged on Saturday that the United States would sustain its military presence and diplomatic involvement in Asia as he sought to calm regional worries about the potential for a new isolationism brought on by fiscal difficulties at home. Yeah, well, keep that in mind, too. Fiscal difficulties because of U.S. involvement throughout the world. In a speech before an audience of Asian defense ministers and military commanders, which included a high-ranking delegation from China, Mr. Gates declared that Washington would not step back from its responsibilities to defend allies, counterbalance regional threats, and assist in humanitarian disasters. Well, the last one, okay. This is a wealthy country. We should help people in need.
Yes.
Responsibility to defend our allies in Asia. Who are we talking about here? I don't know if you remember last week I read all these things. There was a friend of mine had written a academic paper he was giving, and he quoted James Petras, who is, where is he? In here. Another academic. But he talked about why the United States is having so much economic problems and dropping from prominence as a world power. Number one, absolute number one, Washington pursues minor military clients in Asia, which is like Afghanistan, while China expands its trading and investment agreements with major economic partners such as Russia, Japan, South Korea, and elsewhere. Two, Washington drains the domestic economy to finance overseas wars. China extracts minerals and energy resources to create its domestic job market in manufacturing. Three, the U.S. invests in military technology to target local insurgents, again, like in Afghanistan, challenge U.S. client regimes. China invests in civilian technology to create competitive exports. Four, and then actually there's a lot of other things as well. Five, the U.S. Multiplies wars and troop buildups in the Middle East, South Asia, the Horn of Africa, and the Caribbean. China provides investments and loans of over $25 billion in building infrastructure, mineral extraction, energy production, and assembly plants in Africa. And it goes on and on like this. So there's the priorities of someone who is of a country, us, stuck in this imperial mode, and this is what's called imperial overreach. Does that click in pretty well without me having to explain it? Well, maybe I just did. So let's see. Let's go back. So Gates is saying, don't worry, we're going to be fighting these wars in your continent, forever.
Yeah.
Because a lot of other countries don't worry. Because, well, they know a lot of them. They wind up getting a lot of dough from us. They
got bases. Well, there's the money. When it comes to the weapons, we give them the money. They buy our weapons. Sure. It's all happy, hunky-dory.
And Gates acknowledged the grim economic and political realities facing the American government, saying that, quote, fighting two protracted and costly wars in Iraq and Afghanistan has strained the U.S. military's ground forces and worn out the patience and appetite of the American public for similar interventions in the future.
Which leads to Libya. I mean, let's not leave that out, right?
Yes, but even so, Gates said, we recognize that the American defense engagement, the defense. Anybody want to call me and say where the defense comes in here? From our forward deployed forces to exercises with regional partners will continue to play an indispensable role in the stability of the region.
And what are we defending? We're defending the military. They are defending the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone tell us what we're over there defending.
How about this one, too? Brain injuries are seen in new scans of veterans. This is incredible. They think now that 320,000 American troops have sustained traumatic brain injuries in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, get this. Most of them mild. The injuries are poorly understood and sometimes produce lasting mental, physical, and emotional problems.
Well, we know, and we know people who have been affected by that.
Sure.
And, you know, even I have a friend who was in Vietnam who's still having issues.
Now, this one is directly connected, and two American businessmen have been charged with giving Army officers airline tickets, spa vacations, and, oh, yeah, more than $1 million in bribes. So what is this? Businessmen are giving Army officers $1 million in bribes to secure multi-million-dollar contracts to supply the American military and help rebuild Iraq.
Unbelievable.
A federal indictment against the men. And
George H. Lee.
George
What's
H.
with
H.
the Lee name?
Maybe. Maybe that's why I was thinking.
And his son, Justin W. Lee.
Yeah, not Robert E. Lee, not to be confused with. The Lees are among 60 contractors and military officers to face criminal charges stemming from the scramble for often poorly monitored government contracts in the early years of the Iraq War.
Mm.
So, and, but, you know, hey, I mean, you know, Bush lied about weapons of mass destruction.
Why doesn't, yeah, one, doesn't one little lie, everybody just lied. But let's go over there and take.
Well, it's
and kill.
Hasn't everything worked out all right?
Oh, it's just peachy over there.
How about this? Massive anti-U.S. rally in Baghdad. Shiites demand pullout. Though Iraq's government has mostly managed to keep the protesters off the streets over the past several weeks, a massive rally organized by supporters of Muqtada al-Sadr took place in the capital city of Baghdad today, which was May 26, condemning the U.S. and demanding that the American troops leave by December 31st. These are people that are organized into a militia. The march featured thousands of people wearing red, white, and black Iraqi flag uniforms and including warnings that the mass of followers of Sadr could reform the Mahdi army and resist the U.S. occupation if the status of forces agreement deadline is not honored.
Oh.
So this is a result of, you know, Bush policies. Bam.
Bush lies.
Yeah, well, you know, there used to be this bumper sticker. What did it say? Bush lied, people died.
I used to have that on my car.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, well.
And surprisingly, no one ever rammed into me or scratched it.
Where was this? Oh, yeah, here. This thing. This really gets to it. According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which has updated and refined a widely cited chart laying out the origins of the country's current fiscal trajectory. And as before, the lion's share of the problem comes from ongoing George W. Bush-era policies, particularly deficit finance tax cuts, which means tax cuts to his rich buddies,
mm-hmm.
Which eliminated Clinton-era surpluses. Remember, you know, there was
We were doing pretty well, other than that little cigar situation.
Yeah, but there was a financial surplus that eliminated the surpluses, left the Treasury poised for a huge hit when the financial crisis and economic downturn further eroded federal revenues. By the end of the decade, the group projects that on the current trajectory, the Bush tax cuts exacerbated by the economic downturn combined with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan will account for the significant majority of public debt as a share of GDP, of the gross domestic product.
Well, we've been saying that for a long time.
Yeah. So what we always say, too, who is going to wind up paying for this? The big bankers, the banksters, the guys that caused it?
No.
The Bushies? Bush is getting, you know, made $15 million giving speeches. So
yeah, you and me.
You and me. Yeah. With that good news, dear friends.
Put a smile on your face and we'll be right back.
Yeah. And give us a call.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-928-6929 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-928-6929. 1-800-928-6929. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
Hi, thank you very much, and welcome back. We're talking a little about the Civil War, the Southern responsibility for this huge slaughter of 625,000 Americans.
And a lot of it, we started talking about Memorial Day and the origins.
I don't have it in front of me. I got an email from Richard, wanted to blame it all on Lincoln. And then sends quotes from Lincoln. I never mentioned Lincoln, did I? No.
No.
I couldn't think of his name. No, I was only kidding. Hey, Hey, here is, listen, it's always bad news. This is the program of bad news. Here's some good news.
Oh, good. Please.
Last Monday, Germany announced it would be the first major industrialized power to agree to an end to nuclear power in the wake of the disaster in Japan. They're phasing out all of their plants by 2022. Chancellor Angela Merkel said in the decision, hammered out by her center-right coalition, so she's a conservative, marked the start of a fundamental rethink of energy policy in the world's number four economy. So this is just absolutely incredible.
It really is. Do you think that a male chancellor would have done the same thing?
Oh, get out of here.
Come on.
Yeah. What about Bush? Or what's his name? Obama. No, actually, Obama wants to give billions of our tax subsidies to the nuclear industry, although I don't think he's going to get away with it. At 1 a.m., I'm going to be interviewing Kevin Camps, who's a radioactive watchdog for Beyond Nuclear. And he's going to talk about that, plus this threat to the Great Lakes and our whole region from a proposal to ship radioactive waste through the lakes and the St. Clair and Detroit rivers.
Whoa. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. Like that. So this is good. This is excellent. Part of it has to do with direct action. There used to be a slogan of the anti-nuke movement, which was better active today than radioactive tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got one little problem, though. Even if they shut everything down right now, what are we going to do with the nuclear waste?
Where does it all go?
Yeah, it's got to...
Yeah, so why? Let's not make more.
Yeah.
Let's stop now and then figure out what the hell to do with it.
Sounds like a good idea. But yeah, tune in for that for 1 a.m. All right, here is Jeremiah in Detroit. Jeremiah, hi. Welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for calling.
How's it going, Peter? I am an Iraq war vet. I was there in OIF-2, which was pretty interesting. I hear that this... it's kind of funny. I find myself almost in agreement with you guys on some of the stuff about Iraq. When I was there, the Mahdi Army was essentially being formed by al-Sadr as death squads. They were going around and ethnically cleansing all the Sunnis.
Yeah, they were. They're not very nice.
One of the reasons why the surge worked so well and a couple of years later was because the Sunnis are basically dead. So they've either fled or they're gone or they've been... kicked out.
They're out of there.
Shiites wanted.
Well, they were hated, but one reason they were hated by the Shiites, of course, is because Saddam Hussein was a Sunni, right?
Yeah. I actually brought that up. I remember having conversations with some of our interpreters there, and I had good friends who were assassinated, who were tortured to death, so on and so forth. I had a discussion with a Sunni interpreter at one point and a Shiite interpreter at another point, and I asked them, what they wanted for Iraq, and both of them basically wanted the other group to, drop dead. And I knew at that point, I was like, well, this isn't going to work.
This isn't going to go well.
Yeah, this is going to be bad. So I can agree with you on that. But on the other hand, what I could never understand was, I am not a left-wing person. I voted for Bush the first time, didn't vote for him the second time. My original, the first vote I ever cast for president was for Alan Keyes. I was like, Bush didn't.
Oh, my God. You're voting for nutcases, man.
He's the blinker. Remember that, Peter?
Yeah.
But
go ahead.
That was during the primary back in, when Bush was originally nominated. So I was like, not that guy. So we're going to have to agree to disagree on a lot of things.
But go ahead.
And especially the... I'm still in the reserve, so a lot of stuff I can't talk about the president. I can't criticize the commander in chief. I'm still active duty, so I'm not going to do that. But I just wanted to say that as far as the political differences go, we can agree to disagree on all that. But as a military historian and as a strategist, I can't see how this entire thing, I don't see a lot of strategic interest for us in the Middle East other than control of oil resources, which is understandable. I mean, people get upset.
Well, it's understandable if you have to...
big oil...
Yeah, if you have a big, this huge structure that necessitates defending ExxonMobil, making, more profits than any corporation in the history of the world. I mean, you hear these ads talking about that Canada is our biggest supplier, and in fact, one of the things that's going to be contained in this interview I was talking about at 1 a.m. is Kevin Camps talking about alternatives to oil and to nukes. And one of them is, conservation. That's their And also, by the way, you know, the biggest user of oil products in the world, the single entity that is the largest, utilizer of gasoline and the rest of it is the United States military.
Yeah.
So if you have 700 bases across the world, if you're fighting wars all the time, well, it's sort of like a Mobius strip, sort of like a loop, a continuous loop, you know?
Yes. So, and I can't, like I said, I'm not in a position to criticize the Commander-in-Chief or the Defense Department and their strategies for the United States. But I can say this, is that my basic political view is that I'm a constitutionalist, and I believe in limited government for obvious reasons, and I get in disagreements with leftists a lot of times based on, methods, not necessarily goals. I don't think that I believe it would be, the government is governs best is the one that governs least because they, have a tendency to screw up whatever they touch.
How about food safety?
Food safety?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, these are things that...
You're all about food. Yeah, I mean, you don't want the government to govern the least in food safety, do you? Wouldn't you like to have it, in fact, the government to govern most when it comes to food safety?
Safe food.
You're presupposing that a government solution for any public good is the best solution.
That's well, you know, the capitalism and the people at the top, I don't mean, the individual workers or little, mom and pop store, although they're not often as good as the mythology is. If you go back to the 19th century, when it was sort of the right-wing conservative or the libertarian dream, it was pretty awful. I mean, there was no safety requirements, no wage structures, no guarantee of anything, no Social Security. People were just essentially cogs in this huge industrial machine. In fact, essentially, there was no middle class. And one of the things, the reason that I mentioned food safety ought to be pretty obvious, because this there's this deadly wave of foodborne illness in Europe, and it's E. coli bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So here, let me just read this to you. Food safety advocates, this is from the New York Times, hope the federal government will act soon to ban the sale of ground beef if it contains any of six dangerous strains of E. coli that have increasingly been found to cause illnesses in the United States, a step that regulators have been considering for at least 4 years in the face of stiff industry opposition. As it stands now, beef can be sold that has strains of E. coli in it.
Which can be deadly.
If it wasn't for the demands of the government and consumer groups, they'd continue to poison us. So you want actually incredible strong government intervention in our food process, because these people aren't interested in supplying us with food. They're interested in making a profit. And if they have to get rid of stuff that's going to poison us, well, they don't want to do that. And all you got to do is read The Jungle by Upton Sinclair.
Yes.
And,
I've read it.
Okay.
Now, here's my other
read it again.
Is that from 1750 till about, 1890 or so, maybe around 1900, in Britain, you could take the same, coinage and go for, a time portal and still, and the prices would be about the same.
Give me the headlines with this, because I do have to move on.
Yeah. Well, it's just, what I'm saying is that was before the centralized government issue of fiat currency.
We're going way off on that. This is gold standard stuff. All right.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay. I knew it had some kind of a twist.
Stay safe, Jeremiah. Don't get sent back to any war zones. Our best to you. Bye-bye. 313-298-WRIF. I actually wanted to talk a little about what he brought up, but let's get some more people on the air here.
Yeah.
Here's Jerry in Roseville. Jerry, thanks for calling us. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
All right. You know, all this stuff goes back to the Reagan days.
Yeah.
Say amen,
brother. The worst president probably in U.S. history. He makes Hoover look good. He makes Millard Fillmore look excellent.
Well, I mean, he set us back so far, it's not even funny.
Yeah, he started it all. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, everybody who's come after him, they've inherited something that's
his
not
crap
theirs.
His crap.
But you
exactly.
know, one of the things, though, Jerry, I want to say, though, Of course. I mean, there's always bad people. Like I was saying, those 19th century capitalists that would work 12-year-olds in factories and sell poison meat and a thousand other things that needed to be regulated. But people organized and they demanded in what was called the Progressive Era that things like they had the Meats Inspection Act. That means, you know, it's not as good as it should be, but it's better.
But you're not going to die. You're not taking a risk in eating a burger, you know.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you are now.
But the point is that when Reagan began his attack on the middle class, when he began to deregulate businesses, when he began to the long-term conservative goal of returning us to the 1920s and destroy what was the New Deal that created the middle class, we didn't do enough. I don't necessarily mean all of us that were alive or weren't alive, but the American people didn't employ what was done in the 1930s or in the 1910s or the 1890s. So we let these greed heads, these people that had no concern whatsoever for the average person, only for the millionaires of this country, have their way.
Same old story.
And we're at another juncture now. And we see, on one hand, we see what happens in Madison, Wisconsin, in Wisconsin itself. And in other places, you know, the response is, oh, yeah, well, they're trying to take away our rights. Oh, okay.
Right, but the problem is people do not want to do the right thing for the majority of the people.
Yeah, but the majority of the people have an obligation to defend their own standard of living, their own rights. Go ahead.
I agree. No, I agree with that. But the problem is us as people do not stand up.
Who doesn't?
We don't.
Oh, the majority of people.
Well, you know what then, Jerry? We're screwed. Because these people want to return us to some era, probably increasingly before even the American Revolution. You know, they want to.
All right. When you have, land barons. You know, yeah. I mean, just people with the money.
Yeah, they want they just wipe out the middle class completely. That would thrill them beyond belief.
Here, check this out. This was, who sent me this? Joe sent this in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Something by Robert Frank. Last year was another good year for millionaires, though their pace of growth is slowing. According to a new report by the Boston Consulting Group, the number of millionaire households in the world grew by 12% in 2010 to 12.5 million people. 12.5 million families. So get this. There's, how many people in the world now? 6 billion? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what percentage that is. It's infinitesimal. The U.S. continues to lead the world in millionaires with 5.2 million millionaire households, followed by Japan, China, then U.K.
We're still number one, Peter.
Number one, yeah. The important trend, however, is in the global wealth distribution. According to the report, the world's millionaires represent, 0.9% of the world's population, not even 1%, but control almost 40% of the world's wealth. Their wealth now totals $47.5 trillion in investable wealth. So, this is enough money to solve every economic problem in the world if this was to be confiscated from them.
There you go again.
Confiscated from them and leave them with only a few million dollars, right? In other words, they could still be millionaires, but this money would be enough to pay all the debts, to have no starvation, to not have to. I just was seeing in Portugal how there was this election, and now they're going to have austerity programs because the bankers there screwed everything up as well, and the common people are going to pay the cost. All the money is there. All the wealth of the world is there. When you see these kids with distended stomachs, none of this has to be.
Yeah.
And the reason that it is because this less than 1% of the people control almost $50 trillion in investable wealth.
And even if they were just millionaires, they could still go to the south of France, but maybe they could sleep better at night. Oh, that's right. They don't lose any.
They don't care. Yeah. All right, Jerry. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your call. Our phone number, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Now, these, I think I even, why not play it? I even have it up here. Out of the past. Dallas into the ditch, sings Crocus. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about leaving him with millions.
Yeah, we're being kind.
Yeah. Well, if you can't get ready to eat the rich, how about, I mean, at a minimum, you know, we tax them.
Bitch at the rich.
Well, I want to go beyond that. I mean,
yeah,
we
sure.
got, they've
Me
got
too.
The money, you know, and but here, what drives them is this theory, this cockamamie theory that I sometimes think, I wonder, do these people really believe it, or are they just totally flax for the rich? And it's called supply-side economics. You've probably heard that a mm-hmm. lot. It's a theory of economics that says you get economic growth by lowering barriers for people. People. This is what, like, the theory says. But for the millionaires, the billionaires, to produce goods and services, and you do this by what? Lowering income tax on the ultra-wealthy. You lower taxes on their capital gains. You allow greater flexibility, as they call it, by reducing regulation. And this, of course, this is what Bush was all about, is you reduce taxes on the wealthy, you have less and less regulations, and that's exactly what created the mess that we're in. And you would think these people would say, oh, man, we really screwed this up. Can we regroup? How about this? Not supply-side economics, because all that does is make the rich richer. And the idea is they will have more money, and then what they're going to do with it, they're going to open up more plants and more businesses, mm-hmm. and people will have more jobs. Except what's missing here? The capacity for people to purchase. So the supply side doesn't work. There's a crisis not of overproduction, but of underconsumption. And people are consuming less and less because, boy, this really takes a degree in economics, doesn't it? Because they have less and less money. All right? So how about something called demand-side economics? That is, get more money into the pockets of the ordinary people who make up the vast majority of people in this country.
Yeah, you, me, I'm talking to the audience.
If I told you that I made $51,000 a year, you wouldn't think, wow, gee, he's not in the elite. If I made $51,000 a year, that would put me in the upper 20th percentile.
Yeah.
Yeah, 80% of the people in this country individually don't make even $50,000. So, and you know, prices for things like gasoline, everything else
Food.
Go up.
Yeah.
Food, yeah. And so if you were to reduce the tax burden, particularly on those 80%, but, you know, from 50,000 up, say, to 250,000 or 300,000, you would all of a sudden put more money in the hands of people. Well, the people now that are getting wealthier and wealthier, and the rich are getting richer and richer and richer, and the only thing they're doing with their money is holding on to it, or they're investing it in the great crap game in the sky, the stock market. How about this? United for a Fair Economy, our pals, UFE, I think it is.
.org.
Yeah.
UFE.org, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Or just
I've been there a time or two.
Or faireconomy.org.
Oh, right.
I wonder. Anyway, this one took me a little bit. They say invert state tax structures to eliminate state budget deficits. What did they say?
Say it again.
Here's what they did. If the highest income earners would be taxed at the current percentage of income for the lowest income earners and vice versa, it would collectively raise almost $500 billion in new revenue. What they're talking about is that there is so little tax paid by the upper echelons, and whereas the lower echelons...
We're paying it all.
Well, they're paying the highest percentage of it. Of the
Individually.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Where did I see this? The report contends that an inverted tax structure not only solves budget crisis, but increases equity and best spurs steady and strong economic activity, which is a demand economy. Suddenly, people have lots of money to do it. So these, the policies, the Reagan policies, these conservative, deregulation advocates have destroyed the American economy. And it hasn't stopped, folks.
Yeah, and you can go ahead and remind us, yes, we know Clinton put that stuff through, the deregulation. And,
well,
we're not light on him by any means.
No, I want to say, though, I mean, some of this stuff that allowed the deregulation was passed by the Republicans.
Yeah,
and Clinton signed it.
Well,
some of it in during the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
Like NAFTA, like the Glass-Steagall Act, which is, that was allowed... a lot of the financial shenanigans to go on. It was opposed by the Democrats, supported by the Republicans, and Clinton stupidly signed it.
I wonder if he would do it again. I doubt he would. Hasn't he said he wouldn't, that it was a mistake?
I don't know. You know, I can't remember.
I think he has said that.
Yeah. The U.S. added only 54,000 jobs in May, which is a whole lot better than when Bush was in and we were losing like 500,000 a month. But the unemployment rate went up to 9.1%. No president has ever been reelected when unemployment was over 7.3%.
Really? Huh.
Except the Republicans have such a pack of goofballs.
I know. I mean.
Yeah. All right. There's only one thing to do, Jalene. Oh. When we come back, we have to talk about Wienergate.
You're
listening to Nightfall with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jalene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
We're twins. We each have the same car, and we both insured our cars with Esurance because of all their great discounts. But we're not identical twins. I got all my Esurance discounts on my laptop from their website. I got all mine over the phone from a real-life human. But we both love discounts and lumberjacks.
To get car insurance discounts you can love, get a quote today at esurance.com or 1-800-ESURANCE. Esurance, technology when you want it, people when you don't.
Not available in all states. Some restrictions apply. Discounts may vary by state. See site for details.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled, all with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief, managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
Betsy, look at these sweaters. They look amazing on our girls.
Maybe.
Come on, what's wrong?
Suzanne, I have no business being in the store. I should not be shopping. Things are really tight. We're behind on our mortgage.
Listen, Bill and I had the same problem, and we got some really great counseling, and it was free. I'm going to email you the information.
If you even think you may be in danger of foreclosure, call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling today at 866-687-6322 or visit MortgageHelpNow.org. Public service from the NFCC.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. It's our second hour at 1 a.m. tonight. I'm going to be interviewing Kevin Camps, and he's going to be talking about a threat to the Great Lakes. They want to take a bunch of radioactive waste and ship it through the Great Lakes down the St. Clair and Detroit River. Also, and we haven't even gotten to this, David Swanson, who's written a book called War is a Lie, and he questions whether President Obama has the constitutional and statutory authority to take military action against Libya without congressional approval. He doesn't.
Well, yeah, well, let's talk about Iraq.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, well, there was something of congressional approval there. You know, and this is what David Swanson talks about. There is something called the Constitution. I never understood the strict constructionists of the Constitution, mm-hmm. why they aren't all about the fact that the Constitution says only Congress. I think it has the word, someone check, you know, it's in my briefcase. I don't have it. But I think it says only Congress shall declare war. Pardon me. And but then there's the War Powers Act of like 1973 or 1974. But there hasn't been a declaration of war since 1941. We fought all of these wars. Every one of them, there was certainly time that they could have had war declared. And yet what's happened, though, has been this drift of power to the president. What, in fact, this was particularly component of the Bush regime, where they wanted to have what they called the unitary presidency. And this is very...
It is in dictatorship?
Yeah, it's very, very, very dangerous concept. The founding fathers were so aware of the power of an individual ruler that they gave most of the power to Congress, and what the president was supposed to do was carry out what the Congress did.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of flipping the other way.
Right.
So, in fact, there has been, I don't even know where that all went to, but there has been maybe, oh yeah, get this, articles of impeachment drawn up for Barack Obama by Bruce Fein, who was a deputy attorney general under President Ronald Reagan and author of Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle for Our Constitution and Democracy, and also another book called American Empire Before the Fall.
He's been around since Reagan. Why doesn't he just retire?
Well, he says he's been drafting articles of impeachment on the Libya war. Here's a quote from it. A prominent libertarian constitutional lawyer and civil libertarian has drafted an article of impeachment against President Obama over his attack on Libya, throwing down a legal gauntlet that could be picked up by some congressional Republicans. Yeah, but they're not
going to. Oh, it's not going to happen.
No, it's not. The House has rebuked Obama for continuing the Libyan mission without its consent, and Dennis Kucinich, the Democrat, resolution in that would have it would have been a law actually that would have demanded that there be no more activity on the part of the American military in trying to overthrow the Gaddafi regime. Instead, they had the Republican one got passed that just said we don't think it's a good idea.
Mamby pamby.
Yeah, indeed. Let's see. Here is Jesse. Jesse, hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I was, sorry to say, I can sympathize with people who have, like, mental illnesses from fighting overseas or whatever,
mm-hmm.
although I've never done that before, but I have been confronted by the devil a couple times, and I've seen Jesus and Mary and all that. I have all the spiritual support I need, but both times mm-hmm. I've encountered the devil, I've tried to kill myself, and I've had suicidal tendencies from the point I've seen him until the point I've tried to kill myself twice.
Well,
oh my.
A distinctly bad idea, I hope you realize by now, Jesse, and I hope you're talking to somebody about those.
I have my power to stop it because, like, I didn't expect it to happen again, and then it happened again, like, years.
Well, if you don't feel you have the individual power, and sometimes we
do. There are suicide hotlines that you can call.
And there are people there that are caring, concerned individuals who are trained to help people and will deal sympathetically with however you define your reality, whatever you think you've seen. You know, most people don't buy the idea that one can see the devil or Jesus or Mary, but if you talk to somebody that in one of those roles, they are not going to say, oh, you're crazy or anything like that. They will try to talk to you sympathetically. But that's the first thing you should, in fact, if you're having any of those feelings right now, I don't know, maybe we can try to get some line. But if not, if it's not a present and current predicament, you ought to really try to do that in the morning. But unfortunately, I don't think this is the best venue, public venue, to talk about it. But our best to you. And we both, Jillian and I, sincerely mean that. All right. Let's go on to Wienergate. Hopefully, very few of you have even heard about this because it. I mean,
yeah, but it involves a penis. It's big news. Come on, Peter. If there's a penis involved, it's the biggest news ever.
But this is what politics in this country has come down to.
Yeah, Wienergate.
This Representative Anthony Weiner, who is one of the better guys in Congress, a Democrat, somehow a photo of him in an underwear clad erect penis, it actually says this right here, ended up on his Twitter account, and there's this whole big thing. How did it get there? Did he send it? Blah, 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 blah. I mean,
he said that he was hacked.
Who cares? This
is
what
a politician, first of all, don't be, if he did do it, don't be stupid enough to.
I don't think he is that stupid.
I don't think he is either, and I think someone set him up.
Yeah, I mean, he may have, who knows, he may have taken it of himself, but
maybe he was just embarrassed because it was teeny.
Was it?
I don't know. I just made that up. I didn't even see it.
All right. But here, so someone might say, well, wait a minute, you were all over these Republicans when they were caught doing this or that. The deal is, like, Senator Larry Craig, how many of you remember him?
Idaho. He was from Idaho.
He was, too. And he used to hang around in bathrooms and...
In airports. Public restrooms.
And he was tapping, this is a signal among
gay men. It's a code, like, you want to play?
Yeah, so he, like, put his foot over and tapped the foot of this undercover cop, and they busted him. And he said that he wasn't doing that. He says, when I'm in a stall, I take a wide stance.
You've got a wide. Now, come on, guys. Tell me when you're doing it. I mean, peeing.
Yeah.
There's no wide stance, is there?
Well, he wasn't peeing. He was doing number two.
Ew, no. He was
sitting.
Oh, gross.
All right, let me bow out of this for a second.
I'm out of here.
But here's the point. Here's why we were all over this guy. I couldn't care less what he does in his personal and sexual life.
Honestly, I agree.
But when this man, who is obviously gay,
he could be bi.
Well,
he just wants some action.
Yeah, but Gore Vidal said there's no such thing as heterosexuals or homosexuals. There are simply heterosexual acts and homosexual acts.
That's true.
So Senator Craig, Senator Wide Stance, was involved in at least soliciting. He got convicted of that.
He did homosexual
activity. The deal is he led the fight frequently for anti-gay legislation.
Yeah, anti-gay marriage.
Yeah, and that's why this guy deserves to get hammered badly.
Yeah.
I mean...
These guys, they're pathological.
So, I mean, like, there was this representative up in New York State that sent around this... Or he sent a photo to a woman with a, you know, bare-chested photo.
Of
himself.
And a guy's chest?
His own guy's chest. And he resigned.
For a chest?
Well, you know, it was inappropriate.
But why would you send a chest?
I don't know. But the point being, this guy was like, all
give me some ass or something.
Family values. And he's sending, you know, he's a married guy.
I know.
And he's sending out photos. So that it is. So I don't care about Wienergate whatsoever.
It's a symptom.
And
of
the rest
other things.
Of them. Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin and
what about this? How do you say
guy?
Polenti?
Polenti.
Polenti. Tim Polenti, who is
I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's good for me.
Above or below. So he's now thrown himself into the ring with the Republicans for president, and he is one of these, anti-abortion, anti-gay marriage people. And my question is, what young boy is he banging?
It'll come out.
I'm just waiting.
He spoke at the Faith and Freedom Conference in Washington on Friday. I can't believe they have these things. Plenty struck a religious tone, linking his usual stump speech themes of fiscal responsibility and American greatness to Christian thinking. He said, we need to be a nation that turns towards God, not away from God. I've asked before, there's got to be someone out there that, like, thinks this is good. Wow, yeah, we ought to turn towards God, not away from God. What the hell does this mean?
I don't know.
I mean...
Go to church if you want to turn to God.
Yeah, that's where you... Hello, God.
Leave it out of politics.
Don't
spell
it backwards.
Guys, woof.
Yeah. What does this mean We need to be a nation that turns towards God. I mean, here's what I'm getting at, too. The policy. Now, we could mean that we have to not allow people that love one another, that happen to be of the same sex, to marry.
This could be what he's saying, you mean.
Yeah, I mean, this may be what he means, but so that would be policy.
Well, it is, because he said we need to keep traditional marriage elevated on a platform, not elevated on a platform. Like, what more larger platform does straight marriage need?
Yeah.
We're crying out loud. Not all domestic relationships are the same.
He said he came out hard for, came out hard. He came out hard for outlawing abortion, calling that one of the nation's top priorities.
Top priorities to get into a woman's ovaries.
Yeah.
Oh, you scumbag.
Yeah. We could have, how many, I think there's been like 45 million abortions since Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
So we'd have 45 million, well, actually women would still have abortions. They always do. 45 million more people.
And possibly unwanted?
Plenty defended traditional marriage between one man and one woman as the, quote, cornerstone of our nation.
Yeah.
So
it's really working well. 50% of people get divorced, dude.
Here's one nation under God. Saudi Arabia.
Oh, they're very one nation under. Oh,
and so is
boy.
Iran. So is Iran.
Yeah.
The government of Saudi Arabia moved swiftly to extinguish a budding protest movement of women claiming the right to drive, a campaign inspired by uprisings across the Arab world demanding new freedoms but at risk Monday of foundering. Manal al-Sharif, 32, one of the campaign organizers, was detained last Sunday in the eastern city of Dammam for up to 5 days on charges of disturbing public order and inciting public opinion by twice driving in a bid to press her cause.
How dare she drive?
Ms. Sharif was arrested after two much-publicized drives last week to highlight the Facebook and Twitter campaign she helped organize to encourage women across Saudi Arabia to participate in the collective protest scheduled for June 17th. Oh, so that's coming. Actually, she's been released. I just saw that today.
She's on her way out of there.
12,000 Facebook pages.
She's leaving.
Give other before participating.
I would suggest she does.
Yeah. She's screwed there because a woman's public reputation, including her ability to marriage, can be badly damaged by an arrest. How about you say, oh, well, you know, we know those people. Well, here's right here. what happened to this one? Whoa, where was my, well, it was my favorite. It's pretty grisly. Oh, yeah. This is in the U.S. Man burned after prayer group dispute. This is right here in the U.S. of A.
Yeah.
Aaron Rottenberg is recovering at Westchester Medical Center with burns on 50% of his body. He was burned when he and his son wrestled with a would-be arsonist who at 4 a.m. Sunday had placed flammable rags on Rottenberg's wooden back porch in New Square and tried to light them. 4 hours later, cops arrested Shaul Spitzer, 18, who lives nearby. He had burns on his hand. He was charged with arson, attempted murder, and assault. Rottenberg's wife and daughters were at home sleeping when his son saw on security cameras there was a man in the backyard. Moshe Elbaum, the victim's son-in-law, said Rottenberg's problems began after he started a prayer group in the Friedwald Center instead of the main synagogue of the Square Hasidim a block away. This is, a Judaism group. Elbaum said last year the rabbi of the synagogue, David Tursky, announced no one should pray outside the main synagogue. That day, Rottenberg's car windows were broken, then his house windows, then 100 people chanted outside his home, Aaron Rottenberg, leave the neighborhood. Then the attempted firebombing. This is in the U.S. of A.
I guess I don't understand.
He was, apostate. He was a, he didn't go for the whole program of this particular synagogue.
My gosh.
This is what religion always seems to lead to. There's, you know, we could count the good things that the religionists do, the institutions that do good stuff. I mean, everybody likes to cite Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and what have you. But there's too much of this.
And Mother Teresa, even though she dined on lobster tails and stayed at five-star hotels her whole life.
But the point being is that that's one of the reasons. I always say that the founding fathers did not want religion in the public square. And the reason I use that phrase is that's what the religious conservatives say, that these liberals are trying to kick religion out of the public square. And I say yes.
Yes, we are.
And it needs to be done. And no real true religionist thinks that the state and their religion have to be commingled, because you start getting this insanity.
Absolutely.
There was one more thing. Oh, yeah. Remember the guy that was saying that, and I think most people know this, that the world was going to end 2 weeks ago?
Oh, yeah, the rapture. Now it's coming in October.
October 21st.
Great.
So we say, although we say more than initials, adios, MF.
Bye-bye.
But you know what I thought? Maybe it happened. Maybe the rapture really happened.
Yeah, why was that? Why do you think?
Well, these people, like, what was this guy's name? Oh, yeah, Harold Camping.
Yeah.
That just took all the money from these poor, unfortunate people.
I know. People gave up their entire fortune.
And they were, you know, again, these right-wing Christians, totally evil in their beliefs, and their harmful beliefs about gays and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So maybe the really good Christians who are tolerant and loving and peaceful and not warmongers and hate-mongers and, you know, gay bashers and what have you, those people aren't going to be taken up with Jesus. So maybe the really good people... You know, I haven't seen some of these Christian friends of mine.
Actually, I've got a couple I haven't heard from either.
People. Maybe they're out there. Comments, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743. We've got some calls right now.
Back to our phones. Hey, this is Josh in Richmond. Josh, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're doing
great. Thank you.
Hey, man, go ahead.
I just want to talk about, maybe nuclear war.
Well, yeah.
Nuclear war? What about it?
Well, for or against it? Anything you guys want to talk about?
We'll talk about nukes. You know, we've been talking about nukes show. We say get rid of the nuclear power plant.
No nukes.
No nukes.
What do you think?
No nukes.
Are you with us? I think he's
with
us. Right on.
You're down with no nukes.
Yeah.
Can't get no nuki.
No nuki.
No nuki,
right.
We say.
Right.
What about these crazy folks running for office in the Republican Party?
Well, you know, it gets complicated once you start going with the politics, and then, you know, it comes with the politics, and then, you know, it ends up
with the politics.
It's all politics. Beginning to end.
Politics.
This whole show.
All right. No nukes.
No nukes.
Thank you, Josh. Stay tuned.
Josh, you and us.
Yeah.
We're one.
Yeah. Here is Bon in Hazel Park. Am I saying your name right?
Paul Bon.
Hi, Paul. Oh, it's your last name. Okay. Hi.
Yeah. I had gotten your thing there about the middle class, and it's ironic because I've had a site that I've had going for nomoremiddleclass.com. For a couple of years, but with my business, I haven't had a chance to write what I wanted to say, and I just got it done and got it on there. I don't know if it's totally up yet, so if not, it'll be up within the week here.
No more middleclass.com?
Exactly.
Okay. You're saying that's what's happening. That's not what you're advocating.
That's what I'm saying to people, to wake up, because that's what's going to be happening. It is to where it's already started and half gone through.
That's right.
Yeah.
The gas is killing us, and I said that for 10 years. When these people were talking about the stocks were the cause and the housing market, I said, no, it's at the pump. Because when it hits you once, it hits you 10 more times, because the milkman raises his prices, and the bread man and everybody else.
Sure.
So you're paying more to live. You got no money to spend on anything.
That's right.
One of my things site says on there about our founding forefathers, George Washington himself said on the steps when he got inaugurated, beware of the two-party system. What do we have today? Democrats and Republicans. Independents are just way in the back for us, and they need to be up front. There needs to be another political party, which is what my site says, is we should start like a party of We the People Party. Anything that starts a party to challenge them and get them crooks out of there, because all they're doing is the lobbyists are the worst thing in our government. They are the ones that put things forward for corporate America, which is destroying our economy.
Well, you know what? It is a lot like some of these South American countries that would have, they'd have a liberal party and they'd have a conservative party. So the people would get so sick of the conservative conservatives, they'd say, well, we got to put the liberal party in. And then liberals wouldn't fix anything. And they'd say, man, these guys didn't deliver. We got to get the conservatives in. And then they would be that for a few years. Then they get the liberal, you know. So, yeah. So nomoremiddleclass.com. I will check it out. Thank you, Bon. Appreciate your call. Here, the Wall Street Journal has their shorts in one major uproar.
In a wad?
Yeah, they're anticipating a 62% top tax rate for the wealthy that they represent. Media reports in recent weeks say that Senate Democrats are considering a 3% surcharge on income over $1 million to raise federal revenues. Tax the rich. Sounds good to me. So they would, let me see. It'll be $100,000, $30,000. That wouldn't... This would come on top of the higher income tax rates that President Obama has already proposed through the cancellation of the Bush-era tax rate reductions. They approved it. What are you talking about? If the Democrats' millionaire surtax were to happen and were added to other tax increases already enacted last year and other leading tax hike ideas on the table this year, this could leave the U.S. with a combined federal and state top tax rate, top now, on earnings of 62%. That's more than double the highest, what they call federal marginal rate of 28% when President Reagan left office in 1989. So here is the deal. They say, welcome back to the 1970s, which is absolutely incorrect. Because what Reagan did, this was the beginning of the end for the U.S. economy, for the, as Bon just said, for the U.S. middle class, is that he worked assiduously, and the Republicans have to reduce the tax rate of the ultra millionaires and the corporations. But really, you want to go back to is the 1950s, when the top marginal tax rate was like 90%. I mean, you know, they didn't take 90% of people's income. But in any event, either the 1970s, although there were problems, or the 1950s, didn't things work a little better then than the 1980s? I mean, there was more unemployment in 1982, after 2 years of Reagan, than there is now. Then it goes on, the article goes on with all this math, right?
And you got to think about it, this is without Iraq and Afghanistan and everything, sure. It was at that point.
Like Exxon Mobil made $30.5 billion soaking us, and the Republicans' response to that was give them a tax break.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't get it. I don't know how anybody who's making an income of under $250,000 would vote for Republicans. This, according to Charles M. Blow in the New York Times, he said, the tax burden of American companies is lower than all other Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development countries. You get this? That of all the countries in the world, the tax burden of American companies is the lowest. You say, well, that's good. Well, you know, we're America. Well, what this does, it doesn't bring in enough income. It allows ExxonMobil to make $30.5 billion. What if they only made $10 billion? What if they were, like, statutorily compelled to have to not gouge us, for instance, that they wouldn't be allowed to rip us off at the pump? That would be pretty good. We'd have more money. That's a
there's a start, Peter.
Yeah, there would be a demand side economy, and so they have all this money and they don't reinvest it. Let's see. Also, a report issued on Wednesday by Citizens for Tax Justice looked at 12 Fortune 500 companies from 2008 and to 2010 and found that on $171 billion in profits earned, their effective tax rate was a negative 1.5% because of corporate loopholes, shelters, and special tax breaks. You get that? I mean, a lot of these figures are pretty difficult, particularly on radio, to get in your brain. But I mean, you could simply put it like this: we're being screwed by these people. And I mean, on one hand, we always were, but there was great work done to reduce it, and now it's going the other way again. There's X amount of dollars in the world, X amount of wealth, and they're figuring out how is this going to be distributed. Well, the big they, have figured out we're going to distribute it mostly among ourselves, the top 1%, the top 5%, and screw the rest of you. And we can screw the rest of you because you are not doing anything but once in a while you go, beep.
Yeah.
Beep. I don't want to say you're not making a peep, but you're going, beep. Let's see. Time magazine reported in its June 6 issue, coming up in the 18 months since the Great Recession, which ended in June 2009. It ended because these corporations are making jillions of dollars. U.S. annualized corporate profits rose 42%. Are you ready for this? What happened to your economic life? What happened to your friends? What happened to your company? What happened to your neighbors? What happened to your kids? So corporate profits rose 42% to a record 1.6, I guess it's hard even to get into the words, $1.68 trillion
okay.
in the fourth quarter of 2010. This is just the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And how did you do in the fourth quarter of 2010?
Yeah, right.
How are you doing in the first and second quarter of 2011?
So when we say eat the rich,
we're talking about those guys.
And there's also, I don't even want to go on and on about this. Insider trading cases stage hedge fund manager's reputation. He's under arrest, right? Former SEC, this Securities Exchange Commission official, said to be subject of criminal inquiry. And it goes on and on and on. Like, this is a criminal class that is in charge of our economic reality and economic future unless we, the people, grab it. All right, let's grab some phone calls. 313-298-WRIF. This is Russell. Russell's in Kent. Hey, Russell, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was going to ask, make some statements about the war overseas, but the other guy kind of took over that about Obama, so I'll kind of go the other direction. I just don't understand the general population, like he was saying, will not, sit here and think, why not get something different in there in office? I mean, there's obviously crooks, and they just keep sticking it to the American people. Wages get drove down. Nobody can afford to even buy anything. And they just keep going back and forth, Republican, Democrat. It's like nobody can comprehend doing something different.
Everybody. Well, Russell, what the member, I think it was in high school physics, the law of inertia, bodies in motion tend to stay in motion, bodies inert tend to stay inert. So right now, the racket with a big capital R, the big racket is in motion. It controls most of the institutions of this society. So you're there in Canton, Steve's in Grosse Pointe, Alan's in Warren, Andy's in Clarkston, we're here. And we don't have any media. We don't have any. I don't mean to say we don't have any. There's some out there. And there are some.
Peter, we are the media.
I forgot about it. And there are some people's groups that are really doing good things, but they're small compared to
The machine.
To the machine.
And the other thing, there are a few good ones in there, but that's the key word. Only a few. And, like we talk about Dennis Kucinich. And so that's what we need. We need more of these correct thinking members in Congress, if you will.
All right, Russell, thank you very much. Here's our little pet moth who
he's joining us for the show. We are tree huggers. We're not going to kill him.
Yeah.
We're going to leave it to Ron Crichton, who's coming on after the show. He can kill him, but we're leaving first.
Here's Paul in Sterling Heights. Paul, hi, it's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, folks. I put my foot in the bucket again. I am now the captain of the Sterling Heights City recall effort for Rick Snyder.
Wow, the governor of Michigan. Going bye-bye.
Great.
And I've just set up my own Gmail account. I got to purchase another prepaid cell phone. I just want to keep all the traffic going in one direction, if you know what I mean.
How the response to your attempt to get signatures that would recall the governor of Michigan?
I have not yet received any of the petitions. I believe that the drive will begin on July the 1st because we had to wait until Snyder was in office for 6 months before we start collecting signatures.
I thought, where is this? I thought I had gotten an email. Someone said that they were trying to get signatures and that they were surprised because some of the people they expected to sign it wouldn't, and the reverse.
Yeah.
Come on. I live in Macomb County, and this area was famous for the Reagan Democrats.
Right.
We'll see what happens. I'm lucky that there's still a couple of weeks of high school left because we're contemporaries, and at a time when I couldn't vote until I was 21, I was active in the anti-Vietnam War movement.
Huh.
And I'm 59. I'd like to see if I can get some of that youthful enthusiasm to help me out. As far as it goes, there are a number of assisted living senior centers around me, and I think if any of those seniors are aware that their pensions are now being taxed, they might show a little interest as well.
Well, you know what?
They might be taxed.
I don't think they're threatening. I don't think the current seniors are going to get attacked, but I think if you're under 55 or something like that, I can't remember what it is, actually. Or maybe you're right. Hey, so
let us know how it goes.
If you go to my, actually, Paul, you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and you look over in the right-hand column, and there is a recall Snyder link, and you can hook on to everybody that's involved in it. All right, well, keep up the fight. Appreciate it. And
yeah.
Keep us informed from week to week.
I'd like to know how that goes.
All right. Let's see here. Okay, we can do one more call. Here's Ben in Plymouth. Hey, Ben, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
We're good. Well, thank you.
Oh, I'm good. Thanks a lot. Hey, I just wanted to say one real quick thing about no nukes. I'm all for not producing any more nuclear weapons, but one of the main reasons that nuclear power plants that we have are even running is because we're constantly disarming the uranium from old nuclear weapons. So the fact that we have such a clean, renewable resource, more or less renewable, because there's so many nuclear weapons that have been made over time, it's actually kind of a good thing that we have those, because there's no other way to really kind of deplete the radioactivity out of the uranium
other than using it. I thought that they weren't reprocessing military waste for these plants. In any event, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's still,
clean, that's relative. When it's waste... Yeah, that's highly poisonous and toxic.
The whole idea of having the most dangerous substance ever
created by man.
Because it was in the ground, it was okay. Its sole function, Ben, is to do what? What does nuclear energy do?
Well, it's supposed to kill people, basically.
No. Energy, not...
not weapons.
It's supposed to give us electricity.
How does it do it? It boils water. That's essentially what it is. It creates these huge, it turns these huge steam generators rather than having poisonous coal or this other stuff. That's why you got to get the
sounds
renewal.
Good.
Yeah.
Boiling water for lights.
Yeah. And then you've got this waste that's got to be kept safe for 250,000 years like that. All right. We're going to take a break. Thank you, Ben. Some open lines just came available, so grab them for our final segment on Night Call.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werbe and Julene Jordan.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
Michigan Cosmetic and Laser Dentistry in St. Clair Shores. Massages by Stephanie in Novi. Astute Artistry in Livonia. And Town Pump Tavern in Detroit.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
Hamdro Ant Block presents The Household Ant Requiem. If ants invading your home have you shrieking an unpleasant tune, sprinkle Amdro Ant Block around the perimeter of your home to block ants from entering. Ant Block creates a fortress that kills problem ants on the outside so they can't come inside. And that's music to a homeowner's ears. Look for Ant Block and the entire line of Amdro Kills Ants products at Amdro.com.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services' term life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-928-6929 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-928-6929. 1-800-928-6929. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into one 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
Hello?
Hi, I'm calling about the 2-bedroom apartment you advertised. Is it still available?
Sure.
Great.
Unless you're black or Latino or disabled.
Housing discrimination is rarely this obvious, but it's just as real and just as illegal. So if you hear things like,
I can't assign you a handicapped parking space.
That could be housing discrimination. And the only way to stop it is to report it so we can investigate it. Visit hud.gov/fairhousing or call HUD's housing discrimination hotline at 1-800-669-9777. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you, and welcome to our final segment. I hope you can join us. 313-298-WRIF. We'll get you on the air. At 1 a.m., it's Kevin Camps. I'll be interviewing him, and he's going to be talking about radioactive waste. Also, the decision of Germany to end its dependence. Well, I shouldn't say end its dependence. It's going to stop all of its nuclear power plants.
Yeah.
We need to do the same here. Fermi 2 is dangerous. Davis Bessie is the one down by Toledo, another dangerous facility, and they are like the ones that were in Japan that went down. Many of them in the United States. I don't know.
Well, and the ones in Japan are still volatile.
Yeah,
extremely.
And what about our Constitution, says David Swanson. He questions whether President Obama has the constitutional and statutory authority to take military action against Libya without congressional approval. Oh, who cares about the balance of power and all that stuff? Oh, you know, on my website, which I was just reading from, I forgot about, have you ever seen The Story of Stuff? You got to watch this.
Okay. Is it a documentary?
Yeah, but it's done up kind of with cartoons and
Story of Stuff.
Yeah, and if you go to my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com, it's got The Story of Stuff, The Story of Bottled Water, The Story of Cosmetics, and other stories.
Can we watch it all right on there?
Yeah.
The link's there?
Yeah, the link's there.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think there may even be a link to it on our Facebook page. And hey, I forgot. I said we want Facebook friends. You can go to facebook.com/nightcall. And I see we've gotten a few friends. And wow, look at all that. I wish I was a member of Facebook. You can read it.
No, you don't.
I do. Well, I mean, I wish I could read. Go ahead.
If there's anything real juicy, I tell you about it anyway.
Aaron, I see, dropped something here that Fox News used the Tina Fey photo for Sarah Palin by mistake.
No. Is this Aaron, our former producer?
I don't know. I don't want to say his last name.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. A lot of stuff about this proposed bridge that this billionaire Matty Maroon does not want built to
here.
Here,
to go over to Canada.
To go over to Canada, yeah. He just wants his own bridge.
Yeah. Hey,
mine.
Mine. He's a real greedy kind of guy, isn't he? Did you happen to see that whole flap with Sarah Palin this week?
About Paul Revere?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's right up there with Wienergate, with the whole thing about Representative Anthony Wiener. I mean, I am so sick of these people. I'm so sick of her.
I want her to run. Badly.
Well, so do the Democrats, because Obama would win bigger. I mean, we were talking earlier about how no president has ever won re-election if unemployment was over 7.2%, and it's almost 2% higher.
Yeah.
But he could beat her easily.
Right now. Today.
He could probably beat any of the whack jobs. Her and Michelle Bachmann and this guy, what's his, Kane? What's his first name?
Oh,
The pizza guy?
Yeah, the pizza guy.
Yeah.
And but what about Mitt Romney?
Mitt Romney. What? Who was it now? What did he call?
The guy who was always for universal health care.
And for abortion. And for gay rights.
Yeah. And now he's going to go back on all of it, isn't he?
Oh, who called him a Ken doll? Somebody called him a...
I don't know. He is kind of a Ken doll. I didn't realize... you know, I'm not from here, but I've been here a long time. I didn't realize there was a Romney building.
There is?
There is.
Well, he was the governor.
You've been here way longer than me.
His father was the governor.
No, I know. I just never realized there was a building.
Okay, where is it? Where is it?
I don't... Downtown.
Oh, yeah. Right. In our segment, we need a little produced segment for this, the War on Drugs segment. War on Drugs, man.
Is that a little dig at me?
Yeah. War on Drugs, man. I can't even drive on drugs. Yeah. The Netherlands, the government said it would proceed with plans to force anyone wishing to buy marijuana at cafes to first obtain an official pass, a move intended to stop tourists from buying the drug.
Tourist? You sounded like George W. Bush.
No, that's how he said terrorist.
Tourist. Yeah,
tourist.
So they're trying to stop the old smoking of lead dope in Amsterdam.
Didn't you experiment with
It was a success. Yeah. I was there. You know, and the thing, they're going to kill their industry. This is what they go for. People, I mean, not everyone. I went for art museums. I went to the Van Gogh Museum. I went to the Anne Frank House.
But you went to the cafes first.
Well, Peter, you're divulging a little bit. This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
I was doing a little trip through Europe, you know, and it was one of the many stops.
I, too, went to Amsterdam and experimented.
You did?
Yeah, and it was a success.
Our buddy lives there, and he is successful daily over there in his experimentation.
Prime Minister Mark Rutte says he plans to introduce the system later this year in the country's south. An area popular with French and German buyers of marijuana before moving on to Amsterdam's tourists' cafes. A justice ministry spokesman said Friday that the Supreme Court of the Netherlands must still rule on whether foreigners can be blocked entirely. Come on, man.
It's crazy. And, you know, and the ladies and their little, you know, their little windows, the guys go for that action, too. They love that stuff.
Oh, those are the
live sex shows. I mean, it's a really fun city.
Wow. I missed those.
I didn't. I do it right there.
When is it going? I'm going on these tours in the canals.
You're going on these clean up the river rides.
Yeah.
I'm at sex shows in Amsterdam. Peter, you need to come on vacation with me.
Are we on the air? Oh, yeah, we are. Did you know that?
It's legal there.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. Did I say this a couple of weeks ago? Long-haired country crooner Willie Nelson's Teapot Party endorsed who? Did I say that? Republican presidential candidate Gary Johnson, because, wait a minute. Then he said he's committed to supporting Dennis Kucinich. The Teapot Party has endorsed Johnson because of the ex-governor of New Mexico's stand on legalizing marijuana.
Yes. So, Willie, come on.
Willie. All right. Willie do it. Betty don't. All right.
Oh, geez.
Here's Alan in Warren. Alan, hi, you're on the air.
I'm going back to the girls in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I mean, okay, go ahead. I mean, they should be, they're unionized. Sex workers in the United States should be unionized. They have health care. Hey.
They do.
They do, and they're healthy. And these guys aren't getting diseases. And
they're damn healthy. Trust me, I've been there, seen that.
Oh, you've been there, yeah. It's quite something, isn't it?
Well, oh, am I on the radio? Well,
you're on the radio, yeah. It's yeah, hard to believe.
Save your little activity for when you get off.
Yeah.
Save my reaction for when I get off.
Right.
Yeah, hey, yeah, I'm a exactly.
veteran. You're a veteran.
I spent 6 years serving my country.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I've seen the Holocaust stuff. And you may not even want to put this on the air.
Well,
you're doing it. Just don't swear.
What do you mean?
No, I'm not going to swear. But when they played the movie Holocaust, I was stationed in Germany in the 70s.
Right.
And they said, let's put them all in an ashtray again.
Who said
that? That was the common populace of Germany when I was there. And you may not want to put that on the air.
The German people?
Well, it's too late. Dude, you're live.
The German people... We're like, let's do it again. Because
Alan, come on. You may have run into some, you know, weird-ass skinheads or something, or neo-Nazis, but the German people are, you know, aghast at what their grandfathers and fathers did.
No, the common people of Germany wanted to own their own place, which was their own country. And the Jews owned it. And when Hitler took it from the Jews...
Wait a minute. Alan, this is the Nazi propaganda that you're repeating. This is what the Nazis said. This is the rationale for killing millions of people. For people that began a war that wound up killing 30 to 35 million people. German Jews were... were integrated into the economy, earned certain things, but certainly the big manufacturers and the majority of people that owned the banks were Germans. This was just the insanity of anti-Semitism that had been haunting Europe for, I don't know, thousands of years. Part of the religious hysteria. I mean, you know, it was this whole thing. I mean, the hatred of the Jews, you know, they killed Jesus, which I never understood why they hated, because this had to be done in order to, you know, what would they call it? Not redeem, man. What did they do? What did they do? Come on.
Well, who does what?
Jesus. What did he do?
What did he do?
He died for our sins. He died for our sins.
He was a carpenter. Yeah,
if
he
I
was
were
a Jew.
Carpenter. Yeah, he was a Jew. So I never understood why. I'll give you anti-Semitic if you're worshiping a Jew.
I mean, didn't he have something a little dalliance with a prostitute or something?
No. Well, I mean, you're depending if you're watching what well, was some movie.
According to some people, he gave his life for us.
Yeah, I know. All right. Thank you, Alan, but don't repeat that crazy stuff. Let's see. Here is it Omaya? Am I saying your name?
It's Omaya.
Omaya, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? Like I was saying, I've been watching or I've been listening to your show.
Wait a minute. As you were saying, you just said hello. But go ahead.
No, I was talking to somebody.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I thought it was you guys, but it turns out it was just the receptionist.
Well, it's here. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Receptionist. Those are our producers.
So as you were saying.
And I heard your segment about the tax breaks and the people in the 1%, and it frustrates me that people really, they don't know that. Like, they let these people control them, and they let them control their money, and they think that money is the only way that you can do it, but it's not. Like, if people actually stood up and said, I'm not going to stand for these gas prices, gas wouldn't be so high.
Well,
but you know what?
Yeah.
I think that people are scared that if it's only them saying it, that they're going to, that their voice won't be heard.
Well, that's why it's necessary. I mean, you hit it right on the head. That's why in the past, when we've had organized movements to support people's rights or whatever, I mean, if you go through American history, beginning with American history, it was people organized in terms of specific goals. Now we just, you know, we want lower gas prices. Well, we have to have some mechanism. When you look in Europe, the European response to this demand for austerity by these different governments, and all of a sudden you see hundreds of thousands of people in the street, or in the Middle East recently as well, they were organized to the max. And the domestic, similar thing domestically was, for instance, in Wisconsin, where, you know, people organized. You say, well, they still, the Republicans got their way, but these, you know, they're the Republicans' time in Wisconsin is their days are numbered.
Tick tock
like that. So yeah, so organization is the key. How do we organize? Well, part of it with the Middle East, with the Arab Spring, was everything was ready for it. And it, and the fact that a few guys could get on, you know, their Twitter accounts, and Facebook and make it happen, means that it was, the pump was primed and it was, it was ready to go. I don't know if we're at that point yet. I mean, I don't know how many more people have to lose their homes or lose their jobs or see more jobs go overseas or see more millionaires make more millions and, you know, cut Medicare and cut Medicaid and roll back Social Security and kick grandma and grandpa out of the old folks' home.
And the suicide rates are up.
Are they?
Yeah. It's horrible.
Yeah. But, you know, but, Omea, what you're saying and the fact, well, you say that people don't know about the 1%. I think most people do. I mean,
I don't know, Peter. I'm not convinced.
This country is run by the golden rule.
I know, but
those that have the gold rule.
Yeah, right, they rule. I know, but, you know, we talk to, you know, we get the calls, Peter, from the people who say, well, you know, we have to support the Republicans because they're the ones who provide the jobs. How many times do we have to hear that?
But, you know, in the 1930s, right in the middle of the all the New Deal legislation that brought us everything that most of us count on it one way or another for economic and social, literal social security with, you know, small s's, security for our lives and for retirement and what have you. There was you know, Republicans had support, and there was a lot of opposition to unions, even though that's when the unions were formed and, mm-hmm. and all of that.
Sometimes I'm amazed that it ever happened.
Thank you.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just read this book. Oh, I can't even think of the name of the author. I interviewed him and all that. But it was the history of this Detroit lawyer, Ernest Goodman. The Color of Law, that was the name of it. Excellent book about the good history of the city. And at the time that the UAW was organizing, and this was Detroit was a major union town and everybody was organizing. There's a great account in one book I read, not in this one, about these, what they called shop girls, these Woolworth shop girls.
Oh, so yeah.
They did this big, they did a sit-in.
Yeah.
They occupied their workplace in downtown Detroit. They said, well, if the auto workers are doing it, we're going to do it as well. So that was the spirit of the times, was the zeitgeist, if you will.
Yeah, and not the one on the internet.
Right.
Everyone tries to direct us to. But what? How exciting was that time? I can only imagine. You know,
but at the same time, there was stuff like this Father Coughlin and out at what they call the Church of the Little Fuhrer, which is now the Church of the Little Flower, this church out in...
the giant church where they put the abortion crosses
up.
Yeah,
12 Mile in Woodward. And so he had great following, which essentially was a fascist. He was a admirer of Mussolini and Hitler.
Was he really?
There was a something called the Black Legion, which was even more violent than the Ku Klux Klan that attacked not only blacks, but Jews and union organizers that actually killed union organizers.
Oh.
And there was something called the National Labor Union or something like that, that opposed the United Auto Workers and wanted, you know, an all-white union. So even at the height of a really progressive mm-hmm. movement, of something that held out, that not only held out promise for, you know, some social and economic justice, but at the same time, there's always a third of the population that are these damn fascists.
Yeah, yeah. You know? They just, I think, sadly enough, I think they're always going to be around.
Didn't we? Oh, I mentioned the, about, boy, I've been holding this for a long time.
What's that?
About,
you need to go to the bathroom?
No. About the golden rule. That this prices surge as investors rush to safety of gold. He's talking about how gold, doesn't even have the...
Well, there's been this big push for gold. Gold.
You know, I gotta tell you, some of you listeners, I know, also listen to these liberal talk show hosts.
Wait, you're not liberal?
What?
You said liberal.
I know.
Okay.
Am I? No.
You mean other liberal talk shows?
I'm not a liberal.
What are you?
I'm a radical.
Okay.
I'm a radical element.
I wish everyone could see the grin on your face.
Liberals aren't radical enough.
Okay, I'm with you. I'm right with you, next to you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, no, here it is. The price of gold rose above $1,500. This was April, April 20th. But isn't this another bubble? I mean, people say that, you know, gold is real. This, what somebody mentioned right at the beginning, the first caller.
Tangible.
Fiat, they call it fiat money. In other words, it's not really backed by anything. It's backed by the trust of people that exchange it.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, when there's inflation, when all of a sudden the central banks just start cranking out money. So you got to go to gold. What is gold? Gold is a stone. It doesn't have any inherent worth, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people.
It's kind of like the whole Wall Street crapshoot.
Yeah, it is. And the fact that it's gone up, I don't know, what, $1,000 an ounce? Panic in the pit. Silver plunge spreads to oil and copper. And then here's another article. Suddenly, gold isn't looking so solid.
Oh, you've been saying that.
It's behaving much more sedately than its sister metal, silver, which has lost more than a quarter of its value this month. So all of that is this artificiality, you know, this that things have worth. Well, they do. I mean, on one hand, but what economy should all be really be about are simple things. You know, I mean, the necessities of life, not how much are these
food and shelter and things like that.
You know, and some fun and
little
goodies.
Managed to have a little fun.
Little gadgets. I mean, nothing wrong
little
with gadgets.
Goodies and gadgets.
Yeah. But what really has to happen is, you know, as I've said before, we have an economy that that people don't understand, and nobody.
Yeah.
And so Emerson, 170 years ago or something, said things are in the saddle and ride man. And so essentially, we have an economy that's run away from humans. I don't even know if we control. People say, well, you know, Barack Obama's policies aren't working. I mean, Bush did sink the economy, so you can intervene. Humans can intervene in a way to really screw things up, and he did. Yeah. You know, one thing that's interesting. Well, let me do it this backwards. The most dangerous cities in America. Did you see this?
They constantly come out with these. I don't think they know this.
Number one most dangerous city in America: Flint, Michigan.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
There's usually Flint.
Detroit.
St. Louis. Detroit's always in there. Miami's usually in there.
Here's what's interesting, though. I'm surprised. What is this from? 24/7 provided by... I don't know what the hell this is.
Okay.
But anyway.
Can I help?
So, no. So, median income, 27,000, 46% below national average. Detroit, which is number two most dangerous city. 48% below national average. St. Louis, and on it goes. 30% below national average. New Haven, Connecticut, 23%. And you, guess what?
Wow.
As the percentage reaches closer and closer to the national average, then it becomes less violent. So what we're talking about is that that poverty is a prescription for crime. What? And violence.
Wow.
Wow. I should have got a degree in sociology.
Peter, the big mystery. We've solved it tonight.
One thing that's good, though, the number of violent crimes in the United States, including this according to this article, has dropped significantly last year to what appeared to be the lowest rate in nearly 40 years.
Good.
So the odds of being murdered or robbed are now less than half of what they were in the early 1990s when violent crime peaked in the United States. Small towns especially are seeing fewer murders. In cities with populations under 10,000, the number plunged by more than 25% last year. And remember, they used to call Detroit Murder City. And let's see, there was, I think at one time, like 550 murders. I don't know if we
per
ever
year.
Hit. Yeah. And now it's down to only 310.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Oh, that cheery little note.
Step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, let me see. Who do we have up first?
What are you going to throw?
We're going to do the nuke guy.
Okay.
That has got some incredible information about what's happening around here. Talk about the fact that Greece, or not Greece, what did I think about? Why did that enter my mind?
Japan.
Germany.
Germany.
is getting rid of all of its nukes. And it's an extraordinarily interesting interview. It's something I recorded earlier this week. So.
And you usually don't brag too much about your interviews.
Well, I don't, you know, I just say, I ask a question. It's interesting guess. I'm not me.
Right.
You know, they always talk about, oh, this guy's a great interviewer. I'm never impressed with interviewers.
Yeah, I think you do a great job at it, but you know.
Thank you.
You actually listen to them.
And speaking of thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Athena.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
Michigan Cosmetic and Laser Dentistry in St. Clair Shores. Massagers by Stephanie in Novi. Astute Artistry in Livonia. And Town Pump Tavern in Detroit.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
Homeowners, the mortgage market is starting to move, but the good news is rates are still incredibly low. Don't miss this opportunity to refinance your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. Quicken Loans is America's home loan experts, closing 1 million home loans over 25 years. And recently, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. Find out how quick and easy it is to refinance with Quicken Loans. Call right now for a free rate quote and see how much Quicken Loans can lower your monthly payment. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030. That's Quicken Loans, 888-249-1425. 888-249-1425.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-928-6929 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-928-6929. 1-800-928-6929. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, bureaucracies, institutions, they have as their fundamental goal not what their official mission statement is, but rather their own reproduction. You know, in other words, they don't want to leave the scene or the stage of government or history or wherever they're at. And usually, I mean, particularly if they're extraordinarily large institutions or what have you, they're extraordinarily difficult to remove. And I'm thinking now about nuclear power and with the Japan situation. We've all begun to say, whoa, are these babies good things to have around the corner? And what in the world are we going to do with the waste? Now, we've spoken recently with Harvey Wasserman, and he talked about the dangers. And I'd like to approach it from a different angle right now. And there's the most extraordinary thing has occurred. The German government has said they're going to scrap nuclear power by 2022. They're going to get rid of their 17 nuclear plants. And the politics of it all is just extraordinary. And helping us understand this is going to be Kevin Camps. He's been on the program before, and he's working now with Beyond Nuclear. You can go to beyondnuclear.org. And Kevin Camps is a radioactive waste watchdog. And on their site, it describes Kevin like this, and I'm not just repeating this in order, because this is what it says right there, but each one of these aspects is so critical. And Kevin Camps, this is what he's looking at. High-level waste management and transportation, new and existing reactors, decommissioning, Congress watch, climate change, federal subsidies. And we're going to get to, well, hopefully every one of those. But Kevin Camps is in the office of Beyond Nuclear. It's in Tacoma Park, Maryland. And it's a pleasure to welcome him back to the Peter Werbe Show. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
And you said Tacoma Park, Maryland is a nuclear-free zone?
Yeah, ever since the early 1980s. It's been well over 25 years. And what that means is for 25 years now, the city of Tacoma Park will do no business with any company having anything to do with nuclear weapons whatsoever. So a recent example of that was Motorola Corporation wanted to sell the city police department some radio communication systems. The Nuclear Free Zone Committee found out about Motorola's nuclear weapons involvement and said, no thanks. And we've worked with them more recently to try to get them to take a strong position against nuclear power. There are railroad tracks right through Tacoma Park that would transport high-level radioactive waste from a nearby nuclear power plant. And so they have taken positions on that as well.
Well, talking about large institutions, certainly when you add nuclear weaponry to the mix added to nuclear power, you start to begin to almost have the matrix of American industrial society itself. I mean, you might have to have, Tacoma Park specialize in, like, coyote fences or something like that.
Well, the nuclear power industry grew right out of the nuclear weapons industry. They're very much joined at the hip. Right there in Detroit, the Fermi One experimental plutonium breeder reactor in its first incarnation in the early 1950s was intended by Detroit Edison to generate plutonium for the nuclear weapons arsenal. We have the documentation. They had to change their tune once President Eisenhower gave his Atoms for Peace speech in 1953, and then all of a sudden it was more about electricity and plutonium for reactor fuel. But in its first proposal, it was weapons plutonium.
And people are familiar with Fermi 2, and I wonder how many people realize there was and is a Fermi 1, if people remember the man who just passed away, the great singer and storyteller, Gil Scott-Heron, who sang We Almost Lost Detroit, and that happened in 1965, was it?
1966, October 6th. Where were you? There's a great book by that title, We Almost Lost Detroit, by John Fuller. A really great read. It's nonfiction, but it reads like a suspense thriller. The title wasn't an exaggeration. They had a partial meltdown of the core of the Fermi 1 reactor, and they came pretty darn close to a very serious accident on October 5th, 1966.
And people that may remember my interviews with Harvey Wasserman, he recounted how he was the editor of the Michigan Daily, the University of Michigan student paper, and he nor anyone else knew about it at the time, right?
Well, some anti-nuclear watchdogs in Monroe to this day, people like Michael Keegan with Coalition for Nuclear Free Great Lakes, Mark Ferris with Citizens Resistance Against Fermi 2, were school children at the time. They were first graders, and lo and behold, the day after the accident, Hubert Humphrey came to town to dedicate a new library. They had thousands of school children from all over Monroe County out there to greet him, holding their signs, "Welcome to Monroe." The day after this accident took place, very much still in the danger time, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of what happened at Kiev, Ukraine, in 1986. You know, they forgot to tell the people that there was a major radioactivity release happening at Chernobyl. And there were kids marching in the May Day parades, getting radioactive fallout rained down on them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was in Cuba last year, and they're still bringing children from the Chernobyl region that are suffering birth defects. Cuba has been treating these children for the last 20 years. In fact, it was the 20-year commemoration of the first kids from Chernobyl, and they're still suffering damage.
Yeah, April 26th was the 25th anniversary of Chernobyl. Incredibly, a really cynical statement was made by the CEO of Bruce Nuclear Power. And if listeners don't know about Bruce, it is 50 miles across Lake Huron from Michigan. It's on the Bruce Peninsula of Ontario. It's one of the biggest nuclear power plants in the world. It has 9 reactors on one site. And this gentleman, his name is Duncan Hawthorne, the CEO of Bruce Nuclear Power, was criticizing anti-nuclear activists for being fear-mongers, and he said recently, it's as if Chernobyl just happened yesterday for these people. Well, with hazardous persistence of 240,000 years for plutonium-239, which was released by Chernobyl into the environment, in a very real sense, Chernobyl just happened yesterday. We're just in the beginnings of the Chernobyl nuclear catastrophe.
Well, Kevin Camps, that's an interesting way to locate it. I hadn't thought of it in those terms. And that's at Kincardine, Ontario, is it?
Yeah, the crisis du jour involving Bruce is that Duncan Hawthorne wants to ship 16 radioactive steam generators, radioactive waste, on a boat on the Great Lakes right through Metro Detroit on the Detroit River, and ship it over to Sweden for recycling into consumer products. And if that boat goes down in the Great Lakes in a place like the Detroit River, they have no emergency plan to raise the boat. The welds on those steam generators are only good to a depth of 800 feet below water. That happens to be the depth of Lake Ontario, a huge segment of this transport route. And what's inside these radioactive steam generators? Things like 5 different isotopes of plutonium, including plutonium-239, a microscopic speck in the human lung will initiate lung cancer, guaranteed. You know, if the boat sinks and one of these containers, and there are 16 of them on board, were to leak its contents into the water, it would activate a federal emergency on the Canada side. They would have to shut down the drinking water intakes. And it's an incredibly risky proposal being undertaken for no good reason whatsoever. They're just trying to get the waste out of there because they've run out of space for storing it.
Well, it's really not for no reason. That's just because you gave the very powerful reason. Here they have this highly radioactive equipment plus the spent fuel rods that were just stored in the same way that they were at the Fukushima plant in Japan. And, you know, what are they going to do with them? They figure, you know, well, let's get them out of here, huh?
Yeah, you know, Michiganders really have to wake up to what's going on at Bruce. They're making a killing. They're making a lot of money, but they're getting away with murder. I mean, what are they doing up there right now? They're incinerating most of the so-called low-level radioactive wastes of Ontario. That's 20 reactors worth. So they're already importing vast amounts of so-called low-level radioactive waste and incinerating it. And then, to make matters worse, they've proposed what they call a deep geologic repository, which we call a deep underground dump, or DUD, and it's not that deep underground. They're proposing to do this a half mile from the shoreline of Lake Huron. So if anything goes wrong with any of the shipments, the imports of radioactive waste with the disposal site itself, we could see a large-scale radioactive waste catastrophe on the shore of Lake Huron. So we've really got to stop that thing, nip it in the bud.
Kevin Camps is my guest on the Peter Wervey Show. He is a radioactive waste watchdog for Beyond Nuclear. You can go to beyondnuclear.org. There'll be a link on my site, peterwervey.com, as well. You know, I was thinking of how many times my wife and I have traveled up. I can't remember whether that's Highway 6 or whatever, that when we go up to the Bruce Peninsula, this lovely part of the world, and, you know, on Georgian Bay and south of that, Lake Huron, and, you know, beautiful beaches. It was the same thing you were telling earlier about right in the midst of the Fermi 1 partial meltdown. You got school kids being assembled to welcome Vice President Humphrey. So this is really, what's the phrase, always right in front of our face, but always behind our back, in a way, huh?
You know, I I mentioned the cynicism of Bruce's CEO. Well, here's one of the more sinister episodes of cynicism up there at Bruce. The Bruce Nuclear Power Company really throws its money around up there, and even including charitable donations. But, of course, this is less than pocket change for this company. This is the lint in the pocket, right? And one of the groups that they unfortunately bought off with their charitable donations was the local Chernobyl Children's Project of the Bruce area, which then came out in favor of plans for refurbishing the Bruce Nuclear Power Plant and extending its operations, you know, decades into the future. So that was a real blow. Of course, there are great Chernobyl children's groups out there, like in Ireland, for example. They won an Oscar several years ago for Best Short Documentary, documenting the efforts of the Irish Chernobyl Children's Project. They've helped, like you said, in Cuba, the Irish group has helped just thousands and thousands of Chernobyl children in so many different ways, including life-saving surgery. And that documentary focused on life-saving heart operations for children in Belarus, which is their focus. It got the most fallout from Chernobyl. And one of the epidemics of disease is referred to as Chernobyl heart in children, and apparently it's the radioactive cesium-137, which is a muscle seeker in humans, and it's done tremendous damage to the hearts of young children. So they bring teams of doctors into Belarus to perform these life-saving heart operations.
Well, dear listener, before you think this is just another wrist slitter, because first off, forewarned is forearmed. We have to know what we're talking about. But there is actually some good news, and that is that Germany plans to scrap its nuclear power by 2022. Now, they have a conservative government and everything. How in the world did this come about?
Oh, it's such a inspiring history, actually. It really, you know, the Germans, for one thing, know fascism when they see it. And unfortunately, there's too much of that kind of behavior in the nuclear power industry worldwide. So that's a part of it. But in the 1970s, you know, Germany was on the front line of the Cold War. It was itself divided. It was going to be ground zero in a nuclear weapons exchange between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. So even in the 1970s, as both East and West Germany dabbled in nuclear power as well, there was a very strong anti-nuclear power movement in Germany, including protesting against the proposed dump site in a place called Gorleben, West Germany, far from the West German capital of Bonn, right on the border with East Germany, so ironically, not very far from Berlin. Well, Germany, you know, saw huge protests in the 1970s against nuclear power, against radioactive waste. They had, ironically, a protest scheduled before Three Mile Island happened, almost on the exact same day, like the day after. So the news headlines in Germany were Three Mile Island, you know, major accident, and the protests swelled to hundreds of thousands. That's the distant past. That movement has continued through the 80s, through the 90s. And lo and behold, in the year 2000, the Green Party and the Social Democrats hammered out a nuclear phase-out plan that by 2020, nuclear power would be phased out in Germany. Well, when Angela Merkel won the prime ministership a couple years ago, she made it a top priority to undo that phase-out plan. And in fact, at the end of last year, they had granted extensions of 12 or 15 years to atomic reactors in Germany. No longer would there be a 2020 phase-out, but they were talking not until 2036. Well, Fukushima, I mean, the protests in Germany against the undoing of that phase-out were already huge. We're talking tens of thousands of people in the streets all over Germany.
This is just recently, too.
This was at the end of last year. And when Fukushima began, the protests just exploded in size. And then there were state elections in Germany, places like Stuttgart and Bremen. And get this one. In Stuttgart, the Conservative Party had ruled that state in Germany for 60 years. They lost that election at the end of March to the Green Party. The Green Party is now the majority party in the Stuttgart state parliament. So Merkel is seeing the writing on the wall. She has to do a complete backflip on this issue as a desperate maneuver to try to save her political career. And we'll see what happens. But it is incredible. The Conservative Party has now agreed to a 2022 phase-out of all nuclear power in Germany. It will be replaced, and it's more than we get. Percentage-wise, Germany gets 25% of its electricity from nuclear power. They have 17 reactors. It is the biggest economy in Europe. It's the fourth biggest economy in the world. If they can do it, we can do it. We only get 20% of our electricity from nuclear power.
Well,
they will replace it with renewables and efficiency, of which they are already world leaders, but they're going to redouble their efforts in that regard.
On the beyondnuclear.org site, the lead article says, if Germany can get rid of nuclear power, why can't the U.S.? What's the answer to that?
We very much could get rid of nuclear power. We could abolish it. Back in 2007, and we had him come through Michigan on a book tour in October of 2008, Arjun Makajani at the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research did one of the first groundbreaking studies of this. His book is called Carbon-Free and Nuclear-Free, A Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. And in 2007, he documented that, you know, in just a few decades, by 2040, the United States could phase out not only nuclear power, but also fossil fuels from its entire economy, not just the electricity sector, but also such sectors as transportation. And we could do so without any further technical breakthroughs. We have all the technology we need right now, and it would cost the same amount of money as we currently spend on energy, the same percentage of our gross domestic product that we're spending on expensive fossil fuel imports from the Middle East, on expensive nuclear power. If that money instead were devoted to renewable energies expansion, and especially the lowest hanging fruit of all, energy efficiency, we could accomplish this. And if the U.S. can do it, anybody in the world can do it.
Now, the fear is, of course, but you did address that this would be replaced with coal, with this new, here in the Detroit area, there's all these ads being run to support Canadian, tar sand, isn't that what the phrase, tar sand oil, which is the process of getting that is just so disastrous, environmentally disastrous. And I'm sure everyone listening, you say, okay, we could have the same kind of energy consumption, you know, at least make it reasonable, and we could get stuff that doesn't poison us, that we don't have to fight wars for and all that. I'm sure everybody listening would say, oh, that sounds like a good idea. But what I opened the show with was talking about the inertia of institutions and of government and corporations within that. How do we, you know, you and others have the good ideas, which are make so much more sense, yet translating them into reality seem political reality. Because you have Barack Obama saying, hey, you know, nukes are pollution free, and let's put more money into the nuclear industry. Is that still his agenda?
Yeah, unfortunately it is. We sure hope that Angela Merkel talks to him on Monday when she's going to be in Washington, D.C. for a state visit about the German nuclear phase-out and maybe talk some sense to him. But, you know, certainly fossil fuels are not the option to turn to. Even Merkel has said that in Germany, that the phase-out cannot involve importation of nuclear electricity from France or any other country in Europe. And also, they need to meet their Kyoto targets. And that's what Arjun Makajani's book from 2007 was entirely geared to, was solving the climate crisis, reducing U.S. carbon emissions by close to 100% in order to address this worsening climate crisis. And that's what we need to do. I mean, Michigan has already seen tar sands disasters. Look at the Kalamazoo River oil spill. That was a Canadian firm called Enbridge, whose crude oil pipeline in Marshall, Michigan, burst because of lack of proper oversight by this obscure agency in the Department of Transportation called the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. And if the Kalamazoo River spill wasn't enough for folks, well, they had another one, the same company called Enbridge, under the same regulator, called PHMSA for short, over in the Des Plaines River in Illinois. So, unfortunately for us, the same agency, Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, is also the point agency of the U.S. federal government in charge of that Canadian radioactive waste shipment on the Great Lakes. So we've got our work cut out for us to try to hold that agency's feet to the fire and prevent it from just rubber stamping this shipment on the Great Lakes, because they've rubber stamped 17 such shipments over the past decade or two. One of those was on Lake Michigan. It was a Wisconsin reactor shipping two radioactive steam generators instead of 16 from Canada, but two of these things on Lake Michigan bound for Memphis, Tennessee down the Mississippi River. And that was just a overnight rubber stamp they granted.
Well, you know, people, I'm sure, when they watch television or they read about what happened at Fukushima in Japan, probably, you know, that's one of the things that's eroded support in these recent polls for nuclear power. And so people would probably like to get away from that. On the other hand, when they hear conservation, well, I mean, actually, sometimes when my wife and I are on the road up to the Bruce Peninsula, we've stopped at this motel, and we're not making it all the way up there. And one of the things we joke that we've gone there a lot, and they only have 25-watt bulbs, to the point we bring 60-watt bulbs with us, or just two so we can read. But the people more than nuclear death, they fear the capacity not to live exactly like we've been living. What would we have to do to conserve, people would say, it's going to cut back on the quality of my life.
Well, you know what was really kind of interesting about Arjun's book there was that he makes the joke that he assumed no increase in human morality, I guess is how he put it. So when he reported that phasing out nuclear and fossil was possible, he did not assume any change in lifestyle in the United States. So, you know, what you're saying, conservation is hugely important, and we talk about it as much as we can as well. We do need to change our lifestyle. You know, Michigan's known as being the car capital of the world. Well, we need to make some movement towards public transportation, you know, in this country. We need to stop destroying public transportation and actually get back to where we were. I know Harvey Wasserman talks about this, where you could pretty much catch a trolley ride across the country. One trolley system would end and you could jump on the next one, kind of like squirrels traveling the forest top across North America, you know?
Sure.
We need to get back to that too. But we don't necessarily need to do that to phase out nuclear power and to phase out fossil fuels. We can do that while at the same time returning to these smarter ideas.
You know, in some ways, this would almost be an appropriate point to stop. But, Kevin Camps, when you talk about the transportation of these radioactive nuclear generators, ones they're not using anymore, and down the Great Lakes and down the Detroit River, and you just mentioned the one that was going across Lake Michigan, the accusation could be made that, you and Beyond Nuclear, you're chicken littles. Nothing happens. The sky hasn't fallen. The accident hasn't occurred. And the risk is probably fairly low. What's the problem?
Well, you know, the more rolls of the dice, the better the chance that something is going to go wrong.
That's
you
right.
know, Fukushima Daiichi has now laid to rest the false myth that Western reactors could never suffer an accident anywhere close to what happened at Chernobyl. Chernobyl was a Soviet design. That's the only reason it happened. They say there was no containment at Chernobyl, but there was a 1,000-ton lid on the reactor that got blown sky high and fell back down and is now resting at a precarious angle above what's left of the nuclear fuel in Chernobyl. So they have to replace that sarcophagus over there, which is at the brink of collapse. That would be a second Chernobyl disaster. Well, Fukushima Daiichi has shown that indeed Western reactors, General Electric boiling water reactors of the Mark I design, can suffer catastrophic accidents, approaching Chernobyl in severity.
And that's what it's all about, essentially, is boiling water. I mean, but, you know, we're all but out of time. And Beyond Nuclear, I don't think you can do this in 1 minute. During the late 1970s and at other times, there's been huge anti-nuclear movements on the ground, even doing massive civil disobedience at proposed nuclear sites. We don't see much of that. We have the incredible good work that Beyond Nuclear is doing. That means me and the people listening, how can we be part of what stops nuclear power?
Well, right there in Southeast Michigan, you've got Fermi Unit 2, the biggest GE BWR Mark I in the world. It's a Fukushima twin at Fermi 2. Yeah. So you can see the risks of the pools for high-level radioactive waste storage, the risks of the reactor containment being so weak. And then you've got Davis Besse. Talk about radioactive Russian roulette. They've had many near misses at Davis Besse. One, 2002, came very close to a major meltdown accident. So I encourage folks to get involved with these ongoing fights that we're involved with at Beyond Nuclear, but Don't Waste Michigan, Coalition for a Nuclear Free Great Lakes. It's a very important fight. There's plenty of Fermi for everyone to hate, as Michael Keegan puts it. We need all the help we can get, and I'd encourage folks to plug in.
All right, the first place to start is at beyondnuclear.org, and there's an old slogan from back in the day, and it was active today or radioactive tomorrow, and it's got a little bit of humor to it, but it could be pretty grim given what we've seen the last few months.
And Gil Scott-Heron had the anthem shut them down before they meltdown.
Yeah. So I want to thank you very much for being on the show and bringing this information and the good news that Germany is ending its reliance on nuclear power, and we can do the same here. Kevin Camps, thanks for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
If you have a job instead of a career, will you be satisfied tomorrow? But if you develop knowledge and skills, who knows how far you can go? If you're interested in electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology, call ITT Technical Institute. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. It's amazing how great your home looks with new carpet or flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Does your furnace need repair? Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Is your roof leaking? Or are you ready to replace your windows? Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Big or small, no matter what your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro at fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online source of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. You can have instant access to roofers, plumbers, maids, handymen, chimney sweeps, remodelers, and many other professionals. Visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com and find the right home pro for your project. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, isn't it odd how somehow the conservative right have portrayed themselves as the defenders of the Constitution, suggesting, of course, that people at the, on the left don't have any concern for it, that somehow they're motivated by whatever. I don't know. But so you always have these conservative politicians going to these sort of landmark sites to announce candidacies or just to kind of show the flag. In fact, it used to be called wrapping oneself in the flag. But I want to talk to somebody who has been on my show, probably not for a few years. You may remember him. He's David Swanson. He's most recently the author of War is a Lie. He works with this new activist group called RootsAction.org. His website is davidswanson.org, and we're reaching him at his office in Virginia. David Swanson, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Hi, Peter. Great to be here.
And you're in what city? I forgot, in Virginia.
I am in Charlottesville, Virginia. I can see Thomas Jefferson's house out the window, and James Madison's house is down the road.
Wasn't there a big battle there as well?
There were battles here in the Revolution and in the Civil War, and now there are just sort of Tea Party battles.
All right. Well, let's talk about this, because suddenly here I was making what some people say, why do we always got to separate ourselves into ideologies? But there's some coming together, isn't there, over this issue of Libya and the United States' involvement in it. In fact, some people have even called it a left-right alliance. Well, most of us probably thought, wait a minute, weren't we in there for a minute and now we're out? And what's the issue here with Libya?
Well, the Constitution says that Congress decides when and where we have wars. Congress must declare a war or you don't have a war. Congress must raise and fund an army to serve in that war. The assumption was you wouldn't have a standing army in between the wars. And that was the understanding of everyone, of our Constitution, for at least the first two-thirds of our history as a nation. Increasingly, since 1941, the last time Congress actually did declare a war, there have been pretenses by Congress of being involved. We'll authorize a police action, or will authorize the president to authorize wars of a particular type and so forth. And it's become gradually less and less, to the point where President Obama went into Libya and went out of his way to avoid consulting Congress in any way whatsoever. And then put up a sort of a pretense of following the War Powers Act, which is a statute on the books since 1973. It doesn't really apply because it would only apply if Libya had attacked us, which it didn't. Nobody's even pretended that. But it requires reporting of certain information to Congress, and it sets a 60-day limit. The president has 60 days to get an authorization or a declaration from Congress, or he's got to end the war. Well, he didn't. Perhaps popular understanding notwithstanding, there is an ongoing war in Libya. It no longer has much to do with preventing a humanitarian crisis, assuming it did. It's about getting rid of the government of Libya, and the United States is very much involved.
Well, how are we involved? I thought we handed it off to the other NATO powers.
Well, we handed it off to NATO, not the other NATO powers. And, 70% of most NATO operations is the United States. The United States is the biggest member and funder of NATO. Were it not for what the United States is doing with its ships and planes and intelligence operations, NATO would not be involved, or it would look radically different. And so NATO is not meant to be a cover for presidential prerogative. I mean, when we have atrocities committed in Afghanistan, Congress doesn't get to investigate them because the president says or the Pentagon says, oh, that's NATO. That's not the United States. And NATO is not a cover for launching or continuing wars, not under the Constitution, not under our various treaties that make these wars illegal, and not under the War Powers Act. You don't get to say, oh, we're having a war, but it's NATO. Congress has taken some steps toward limiting U.S. involvement. Congressman John Conyers from Detroit had an amendment passed last Thursday in the House. We have yet to see what the Senate does to ban the use of ground troops, of U.S. ground troops in Libya. But of course, the UN resolution bans the use of foreign ground troops, and we've already got them from other NATO partners. So the problem is that the war in Libya, the U.S. involvement in the war in Libya in any way, is clearly unconstitutional and clearly violates the War Powers Act as well.
Well, David Swanson, I appreciate and agree, actually, with everything you've said so far. But it almost sounds quaint, and here's why I say that. As you said, that constitutional provision, and on one hand, you have the strict constructionalists on the conservatives and certainly respect for the Constitution by liberals, and yet here we've had the Korean War, the Vietnam War, Grenada, Iraq 1, Iraq 2. I'm probably forgetting a couple. Panama, and maybe I got them all there. And that's never happened. So whatever happened to this, we got a constitution, we've got to follow it? Because in each one of those cases, there's nothing that would have prohibited the sitting president from saying, hey, I want a declaration of war on North Korea, or I want a declaration of war on North Vietnam, but nobody ever did.
That's right. And that's the strongest argument anyone has offered for this violation of the Constitution or of the War Powers Act, is it's been violated before, which is not actually a legal argument. It's an argument for losing the strength of the rule of law. And I'm afraid you left out dozens of wars, even dozens that are currently happening. I mean, the Constitution doesn't say you need a certain number of tanks or planes or a certain number of dead for it to count as a war. You know, when we put our military into operation in another country and people are being killed, that's unconstitutional if the president doesn't have a declaration or some kind of authorization at the very least. And the problem is that the authorization to use military force that was passed in 2001 after the 9/11 attacks tied everything to 9/11. The president can go ahead and launch wars if there's a connection to 9/11, and we're in a small way in dozens of nations now with special forces with no connection to 9/11, and in Libya there's no connection to 9/11, and so there's language in that bill that passed last Thursday out of the House that says from here on out, presidents can make wars anywhere, anytime, without that connection to 9/11. It effectively does away with the War Powers Act and does away with the Constitution if we choose to give that new law priority over the Constitution. So that heads to the Senate. We'll see what they do. Meanwhile, the House is busy debating and voting on today resolutions on whether or not to end the war in Libya.
Well, I want to ask you that in a minute, but I'm going to ask you probably one of the most difficult questions to, it's a generic question, it's one of the most difficult to answer, but I want to remind people that you're listening to the Peter Werbe Show, and my guest is David Swanson. He's the author of the recently released War is a Lie, and he works with Roots Action. It's rootsaction.org. His website is davidswanson.org, and he's an incredible blogger as well. I get his almost, I think, daily, emails as well. Here's the tough question. So all of this has happened. The War Powers Act has been ignored. The Constitution has been ignored. Here's the big one. So what? I know that's a tough one, isn't it? Or is it?
Well, so what? So we have ongoing wars that are costing us in terms of safety, are making us less safe, are draining our public treasury, are damaging our economy, are being used as justification to strip away our civil liberties, are breeding ill will around the world, and are setting incredibly dangerous precedents. So if, you know, as I said when Bush was president and say now while Obama is president, if it's okay with you for presidents to launch wars at their whim and to pay for them out of your pocket at their own individual discretion because the president currently belongs to one party, what about the next president and the next president and the next president? Because the abuses of power and the consolidation of power that happened under Bush and Cheney has accelerated under Obama. And if this latest bill passes and if this latest precedent is allowed to go without challenge on Libya, whoever is president next and the one after them and the one after them, as long as this nation lasts, will have the power to make wars, to take, you know, unlimited amounts of money, and to do unlimited amounts of damage.
Well, that's a great answer to so what, because that's what's so important, because, you know, the Constitution was an incredible document, and with, you know, talk about it, they didn't reinvent the wheel, they invented the wheel in many ways. I mean, there was a lot, there was the Magna Carta and some of these other, you know, Native American document and all that, but the idea of having balances on the power of the different branches was truly genius. And then when you have Bush and Cheney start talking about a unitary presidency, you're talking about one branch having extraordinary power at the expense of another, so that virtually then begins to operate unchecked. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, and Congress members from both parties standing up today and saying we're a co-equal branch and imagining that that's daring miss the fact that of how the Constitution is put together, this document that people scream about God having authored and so forth. Somebody should read it, because the first half of it, Article 1, gives just about every power under the sun to the legislature. The people who wrote this thing had fought a revolution to get away from power in the hands of a single individual, and they didn't split up the power to decide when and where we have wars. They gave it to the Congress. They explicitly gave it to the Congress. They said so before and after. George Washington said so. To take that and move it to the president, not just in practice, which we're at already, but legally down on paper in writing, is the biggest fundamental shift in power within our federal government since we've had a federal government.
Well, David Swanson, we are recording this on Friday, June 3rd, and you mentioned today this is going to air in 2 days after on Sunday. So bring us up to speed on what is happening in the Congress. Dennis Kucinich, the congressman from Ohio, has a resolution. John Boehner, the Republican head of the House, the Speaker of the House, has one as well. What's going on here? And I know you can't predict the future, but you said you were watching this all on C-SPAN. How's everything falling together?
Well, as of Thursday, after this vote the previous Thursday, in which John Conyers' amendment and another amendment saying this bill does not authorize war in Libya passed with huge numbers, Speaker Boehner and others, including the White House, were concerned that Kucinich's resolution would pass. Kucinich's resolution is a single sentence saying the United States will end warfare in Libya, will get out. Were that to pass and then pass the Senate as well, that would make the war, I guess I would have to say, significantly more illegal than it had been before. There was a great fear that that would actually happen. And so Thursday night, overnight, Speaker Boehner came up with a long 7-page convoluted resolution that wouldn't have the force of law at all. It just expresses the sense of the House, wouldn't even go to the Senate, and doesn't call for ending the war in Libya, but explicitly recognizes that it is unauthorized and then allows it to continue and requests the reporting of various information from the White House. And apparently what happened Thursday night and Friday morning is that a significant number of Congress members, particularly Republicans, decided that that rhetorical pretense was going to be good enough for them, and they would vote for that and vote against Kucinich's amendment or resolution, which actually had teeth to it.
Oh, wait a minute. I thought the Republicans were the great defenders of the Constitution.
Well, you know, conservatives, understood as actually conserving things, are defenders of the Constitution. And in fact, probably more Republicans than Democrats by far spoke in support of Kucinich's resolution on Friday. But, you know, what's going on here is that you have a certain number of Congress members, including some Democrats and some Republicans, who are actually standing up for the rule of law and the power of Congress and peace and justice, and you have most others who are either deferring to presidential power or following partisan demands. And so a lot of what was motivating the Republicans to back Kucinich was just wanting to make Obama look bad, just wanting to give a slap in the face to Obama. They didn't actually care about stopping a war or preventing anyone from getting bombed in Tripoli. They just wanted to slap Obama. And they could do that with something rhetorical. And then a lot of Democrats, you know, are opposing it because there are Republicans involved, or are opposing it because Obama is a Democrat. I mean, overwhelmingly, it's partisanship here, not ideology, that's at play.
Well, if you're just joining us, my guest is David Swanson, and you can go to his website, davidswanson.org. He recently released War is a Lie, and he blogs as well and sends out daily. Is it daily, David, daily releases on events?
I guess I would say average daily, yeah.
Good. I enjoy getting
sometimes more, sometimes less.
Yeah. We're talking about U.S. involvement in the ongoing military campaign against the Gaddafi government in Libya. And as I said, that's probably below most people's radar that this is even going on. There's no battle casualties. There aren't any troops on the ground. And I would think that most people would think, Muammar Gaddafi, this guy is so awful good. Let's get rid of him. And so the constitutional issues that we're talking about probably don't even play in any great manner to the average person.
Well, they may not, but if you're going to authorize every future president, no matter how crazy you may think they will be, or how much you may dislike them and their families in decades to come, to make war at their whim, you're undoing the Declaration of Independence. You're undoing what there was a revolution and a new constitutional government put in place 2 1/4 centuries ago for. And sure, Gaddafi is not a nice guy. He was not a nice guy 4 or 5 months ago when we were supporting and arming him. And to listen to these Congress members on Friday denounce his long history of not being a nice guy misses the fact that all around that region of the world, in Bahrain, in Yemen, in Saudi Arabia, in Egypt still, and in Israel, we're arming people who are not nice guys to do not nice things. And someday we'll turn against them and fight a war against our own weaponry manufactured in this country. We have to stop using these childish, cartoonish excuses to motivate wars when our overall policy is one that generates these crises in the first place.
Well, even under the UN Charter, I mean, what the government, well, Gaddafi mostly has spoken, but I think some of his officials as well, he said this is an internal matter, and it has attacked rebellious forces. I got to remember, you know, a hundred and some years ago, the United States attacked rebellious forces within its own country, and with this, nothing approaches the death toll from that war, the American Civil War, 625,000 people. But the toll has been much greater in Syria. The repression, just as bad in Bahrain that you mentioned, ongoing royal dictatorship in Saudi Arabia. Why aren't we attacking Syria? Why haven't we suppressed the Bahrainian government?
Right, because our wars are not motivated by humanitarian concerns. It's encouraging that that rhetoric is needed, that that propaganda is needed, that a significant chunk of the American public won't buy a war just to go kill some evil foreigners, but have to have it be an act of philanthropy. That's encouraging. But you still have the wars, and they're still just as evil. And when the United States green lights Saudi Arabia to go into Bahrain with forces and to kill civilians there in order to get their support for our supposedly humanitarian effort in Libya, the hypocrisy, it just hits you in the face.
Is that what you mean by your book title, War is a Lie? Is that where that comes out of?
Well, what I mean by that is that the justifications given for wars before, during, and after are almost entirely false, and there's a limited number of types of them that keep recurring. And the idea that we need war, that wars will always be with us, that it's somehow in our genes and we can't shake it off, is a lie. We can do without war. We can do better without war. We can have more peace and prosperity and environmental sustainability and civil liberties without war. And we have to sort of outgrow our willingness to accept the initial lies.
Oh, David Swantz, I can imagine people driving along or sitting in their houses thinking, oh, another dewy-eyed liberal who doesn't understand the ferocity of our opponents and people that would do us harm and peace, love, and all that, but ultimately it's a mean, cruel world, and you're advocating, they would say, that, you know, a virtual surrender.
Well, I'm not. If you look at the success that the people in Egypt, dewy-eyed or not, have had in a number of months, and the success of the people in Tunisia, and the success that seems to be coming in Yemen from a force that is more powerful than blowing stuff up, from nonviolent resistance, then you have to question, you know, why is it that a decade of incredibly expensive in every way of bombing in Afghanistan and 8 years in Iraq has not made the advances toward democracy that a couple of months have made in Egypt and Tunisia, which is more powerful? It's not to suggest that Hosni Mubarak is a nice guy. He was quite an evil guy while the United States was supporting and arming him right up until the moment he was overthrown and we turned against him. It's not to suggest that there isn't evil in the world. It's simply to recognize that the very most evil thing, which tends to generate more evil from all sides, is war. You can't use war to undo something worse than war, because there's no such thing.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking the other day, if George Bush hadn't have fabricated this lie about Saddam Hussein having weapons of mass destruction, that he could have easily been another casualty of Arab Spring, maybe the Taliban in Afghanistan as well.
It's entirely possible, and it would have been much more likely had we been investing in that, right? I mean, and there were U.S. groups and advisors and professors counseling the Egyptian organizers for years leading up to the Arab Spring, and that does a great deal of good, just as, you know, way back when George Soros providing cell phones and fax machines and the rest to those in Poland who wanted to shake off the Soviet Union. This is a far less expensive approach to foreign relations. If you want to actually invest in democracy and civil society. You do it by building nonviolent resistance to tyranny, which succeeds over twice as frequently as violent resistance to tyranny. So, you know, you're not going with a lesser approach. You're going with an approach that succeeds more often, plus doesn't cost us our young men and women or our public treasury.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of Americans have a lot of concern about what happens to people in the other countries. But I just was reading an article yesterday. 300,000 American troops have suffered traumatic head injuries. I mean, and I wonder whether that was all worth it for Saddam Hussein in this ongoing war in Afghanistan. Well, we're getting close to being out of time, and so one of the things we didn't talk about, why is the Obama administration so selective? Why is it trying to take out Gaddafi and not Assad in Syria, or not the president of Yemen, or the guy that runs Bahrain?
Well, our U.S. Navy has a fleet stationed in Bahrain. If we don't support cruel dictatorship there, we might have the rule of the people, and the people might say, we don't want your fleet stationed in our harbor, and we might have to move it somewhere else, or God forbid, bring it home and shut it down and put those dollars into something useful. Our interests in Libya are interests in oil and interests in finances and interests in immigration and interests in basing and stationing of troops and weapons. They're not humanitarian concerns, which is not to say that many Americans, including members of our military and our State Department, don't have humanitarian concerns. It's to say that that's not what's deciding these adventures at the very top level of decision making. And I would strongly dispute the idea that Americans are not concerned about people around the world. The fact that they are is why these wars have to be sold in those terms. You cannot sell wars anymore without pretending that they are for the benefit of people around the world. And that's, you know, twisted and perverse, but it's in a certain light encouraging.
Well, David Swanson, we're out of time. Where to from here? I know you working with the group Roots Action. You can go to rootsaction.org. Where to from here?
Well, that's one good place to go. It's an online activist group that is organizing for concerns shared by the majority of Americans, including get out of Afghanistan. It's been 10 years. Let's stop this madness without deference to a political party, which is what kills most activist groups in this country on either side of the political spectrum.
Well, David Swanson, thanks so much for being again on the Peter Werby Show. You can reach David Swanson through his website, davidswanson.org. He's recently released War is a Lie, and also, again, it's rootsaction.org, how you can be involved directly. Thanks again.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled. All with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief. Managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Is it time for a new roof? Call Sears Roofing. You can save $500 if you call right now. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Get your roofing job done right. Call Sears Roofing now. You can save $500. Call now. 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
These days, carrying a mortgage can overwhelm even the strongest person.
Don't I know that?
But there is a way to help ease your struggle, especially if you're facing foreclosure. One option may be advice from a certified foreclosure prevention specialist. It's absolutely free. Don't struggle. Learn more at www.makinghomeaffordable.gov. That's makinghomeaffordable.gov. Because foreclosure is not a foregone conclusion. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Homeowners, the mortgage market is starting to move, but the good news is rates are still incredibly low. Don't miss this opportunity to refinance your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. Quicken Loans is America's home loan experts, closing 1 million home loans over 25 years. And recently, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. Find out how quick and easy it is to refinance with Quicken Loans. Call right now for a free rate quote and see how much Quicken Loans can lower your monthly payment. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030. That's Quicken Loans. 888-249-1425. 888-249-1425. Don't just dream about a brighter future. Go for it. If you want to pursue a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education, ITT Technical Institute. ITT Tech offers career-focused programs in electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. You can develop knowledge and skills that you can use to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. ITT Tech's programs are designed to give you practical, real-world experience. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days each week. Career service.